Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. You can join us there. The Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook, you go to the search bar, you type in the Matthew Aaron Show, you click like, and you will be following our every move. We're on Stitcher. You can listen to Corolla, you can listen to Marin, and then you can listen to us, and you can tell me how much I suck compared to them. iTunes, you can go to iTunes and you can subscribe to us there, and it'll go straight to your phone, straight to your iPod. Anytime you plug in and you're ready to go, you'll get all the episodes straight to your contraption. Please leave your remarks or comments if you'd like, instead of emailing me how much you hate me. I much rather enjoy your hatred live on in front of an audience. What else is going on? Where else are we? Once again, I want to thank Tay Chicago, who had us for all those months in Burbank, California. You can go to Tay Chicago, 603 North Hollywood Way. Thank you, Arlene and Joe Montaigne. Great food. It's a Chicago spirit in California. And I am back here in Mom's basement until Lenny and I get our place, which is looking like a month or two, which is not what I was hoping, but it's life. For everyone that's been following, I've been doing this film that's basically my baby. So I'm producing it, directing it, acting in it, writing it. And it is a lot of work, as I was just telling my good friend who I did a show the other day, and he's joining me for the beginning of the show here until we have Peter Segal on. Peter Segal, of course, the director of Tommy Boy, the upcoming Grudge Match, Longest Yard, Get Smart. What else did Peter do? 50 First Dates, Anger Management. He worked with Jack, so I'll be bothering him about that. Farley, I'll be bothering him about that. Probably a little less on the Get Smart. I don't really have anything to bother him with that.
Carell? I don't know.
Yeah, I love Carell, but, like, listen, the problem with today's stars is no one's interesting.
Sure.
Just really, no one is interesting anymore. Is there really a celebrity, a famous actor, like A-lister, who interests you? That's working consistently, not like Jack, who does a movie once every millennium now, or Warren Beatty, who's whenever he feels like it. He hasn't worked in since 2001. Is there any famous actor that you're like, man, I really want to know more about what it's like to work with them?
I think that's why I don't read the tabloids nowadays, because I don't give a shit about what Steve Carell does on his personal days. You know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
So, by the way, we're here with Andy Dare, and Andy, I did Andy's show the other day in his new studio, and that's the thing, right? There is nobody that you're like, man, I wonder what it's like to work with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because we just assume it's the standard run-of-the-mill. Not anything bad.
Sure.
I don't think anything bad of these guys or Steve Carell, but I just feel like Steve Carell probably puts in his input, he collaborates, and that's that. Like, I know how Vince Vaughn is. I know he's a pain in the ass to work with, or John Cusack. I know he's a pain in the ass to work with, but those guys don't really interest me. Sure. De Niro, he's just a pretty humble, boring guy. And then Stallone, he's Stallone. We know these things. A-list actor-wise, like, Channing Tatum's personal life, and I don't mean personal life like I want all the gossip, but like how Jack was or Beatty was or Paul sure. Newman even was, I'm just not that interested in their lives.
Seems like the professional actors, they are professional. And back when we were excited about the actors, they were also not professional. Like Chris Farley, I mean, I'm sure when he hit the set, he was professional. But the whole,
sometimes,
you know, 22 hours of the day besides that, I think he had a lot of fun.
I think Chris was pretty professional on Tommy Boy because they had him kind of cleaned up and David was,
sure.
like, watching him, David Spade.
It was his big shot.
By the way, David Spade's the best ever, isn't he? He's great.
Of course.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's someone that makes me laugh personally.
Okay.
Like, not just in his movies. Like, his Instagram's the most amazing thing ever. Like, I don't follow any celebrities on Instagram outside of Frank Grillo, but it's because I love Frank and David Spade. And the reason I don't know David, I know Frank. The reason I follow David is because the guy's so legit funny. He's like
true.
The real
yeah.
deal funny. Like, and he's not afraid to take shots at himself either. A lot of these people are so sensitive nowadays about how you think of them.
Yeah.
That, you know, so we will talk to Peter, and I'm sure we'll bring up Farley, because, you know, I've read Artie's first book, Artie Lang.
Okay.
His first book, he talks about what a mess Farley was on the set of Dirty Work, and we've all heard the rumors and stuff otherwise,
yeah.
and I briefly have talked to Saget about it, and, you know, so there were, but that...
And coming from Artie Lang, that means a lot. When Artie's saying, whoa, yeah, you're going
when
a little
Artie's
crazy.
Saying someone else is fucked up, yeah.
That means something.
Have you read Artie's new book?
Only Too Fat to Fish. I love
great
that
book.
One.
He has a new book. I forget the title of it. I've been reading it. His new book is great. Like, most times you're like, oh, my God, another memoir. It's like, dude, you're just pumping out for money, right? And I got that feeling when I got Artie's new book.
Okay.
They sent it to me, so I didn't pay for it. So I wasn't, like, too, you know, sour about it.
Sure.
But I was like, oh, Artie put out another book
again.
So soon, and like, what new? Okay, this story is about his, first of all, if you're into stand-up comedy, this is a book to read.
Gotcha.
His first book isn't so much about the inner workings of a stand-up comedian. This book is basically about Artie falling apart up until the point where he tried killing himself,
yeah.
And survived. And that's what this whole book's about, and it's kind of amazing. And the fact that he could try and succeed, if you're open to it, to make that situation funny, because the book does have humor in it.
Okay.
I guess it's funny because he's alive, and he could tell the story, and he could write about it. It's like a lot of my stories that are awful.
Yeah.
We laugh because I'm sitting here across from you, and you see me, and I'm clean, and I'm not an asshole, and
sure.
I have a sense of humor about it. If Matthew Aaron was dead 3 years ago from all the drinking and drugs and casual sex, those stories wouldn't be as funny. Like,
no.
Farley stories are not funny. Every book written about Chris, every bio done about Chris and Chris's fall from grace, I've cried at a bunch of them.
Sure.
I cried reading his book. I've never cried reading a book before. Grapes of Wrath, fucking, you know, all the Mice and Men of Mice and Men. I didn't cry during that. I cried reading the bio written by his brothers and all the cast members of SNL and people he worked
sure.
with. It was heartbreaking. I've never cried reading a book before because it's not visual. There's nothing really to make you feel
tangential,
a lot of things.
Yeah.
Have you ever cried reading a book?
I don't think I have,
that's
personally.
A tough one,
yeah,
right?
That's a tough one to do. A movie is way easier. It's all put
yeah.
in front of you. But yeah,
and it's
book?
A little manipulated where it's, you know, it's visual. There's sound. There's... You know, you're
also my OCD reading a book. I'll get through a couple pages and then I'll be, hey, let me check the Twitter 1 second here. Okay,
you're
back to the
ADD.
Book. Back to the book.
You got
yeah.
the ADD.
ADD
going.
Yeah.
Yeah. OCD, you'd be cleaning up.
Oh, that's true.
You'd
be yeah,
making
I'd be
sure all the
hands.
Pages are nice and nice and flat. Yeah, I never cry reading a book. I know women though that will cry reading those like dime store romance novels.
Sure.
I'm like, how? What is wrong with you? What?
That's
no offense, but what's wrong with you?
It's funny, though. Recently, I got the Netflix. I got the complete SNLs. They take the music out. They also trim
really?
Them down. They trim them down. To
so
like
it's like the VH1 ones they show, except without
yeah.
the musical acts.
Exactly.
Because the good thing about watching the reruns on VH1 when they do have them
mm-hmm.
is the musical
yeah,
acts.
I mean, those. Yeah.
You're a big music guy, so I get it. And you know I'm a big music guy. And especially the ones from the 90s. Like, you want to see the music
act. Yeah, you remember where you were when you see the music
yeah.
act.
Yeah.
But anyways, I don't know. I just wanted to see Chris Farley's last appearance. Remember, he came back as a host.
Yeah, that's right.
About a week and a half before he died.
It was Almost Heroes, right? They was promoting or was it Dirty
so.
Work? Something like that.
I think it was before Dirty Work.
He may have not yeah. been promoting anything at that time.
I don't think
been,
so. He
it
was
may
in
have
bad
been just
shape.
To come back.
Nah.
Yeah, in the book. His book that his brothers wrote, they talk about that. They also talk about it in the SNL book that came out.
I got that one. Yeah.
And you've read the SNL book that What's-His-Face wrote, the famous writer for the used to
Not
be the Smigel, Washington
or,
Post.
Oh, hum.
Tom Shales.
Okay, yeah, that's the one.
And it's all the behind the scenes about SNL. It's a great
yeah.
book. And it's a lot of SNL people talking shit about working there, too, which is interesting. But they do talk about Farley's appearance in that book, too,
yeah.
and basically how it was not a good week.
It's not a good week, but darkness makes for great comedy. He does an insane...
It turned out good.
An insane Hank Williams Jr., which is hilarious, and the last Superfans is incredible.
Yeah.
He still believes it's 1986, even though it's 1997. And they just go running with that whole spiel that how he still thinks it's 87, so he has to be put in the hospital. And it's just really dark but funny at the same time. Will Ferrell gets to share scenes with Chris Farley. It's a weird intersection
of
eras.
No, it turned out well, but they tell the story about how Lauren had to deal with Chris all weekend. It was brutal, and he wasn't showing up for rehearsals.
Oh, I'm sure.
He was hammered, and God knows on what. And I remember, I forget who told the story, but someone was telling a story. It may have been Cusack or Vince Vaughn, and both guys are pains in the asses. So, but I do believe the story. It was somebody, and they bumped into Chris before he died at a strip club, and they said it was the most depressing thing ever. And they told this story, which when people die, you should try to tell stories that don't present them in a way that you don't want to remember them.
Sure.
Whichever guy told this, that's why I don't want to place a name on it. It was not a flattering story. And
I don't know why you would do that if you were once friends. I mean, maybe if they didn't.
They said they weren't really friends with him, but there were no issues. It was just about how off the rails he was.
Why would you drag him under the mud? He's already in the mud.
Because you know this with rock stars, because you follow music religiously. And all these bios that come out about dead rock stars or drug addicted rock stars, Kurt Cobain's, the Jim Morrison's, and you read these stories that are like not flattering at all.
No,
and it's like, do we really need to tell that one?
Yeah,
you know, it's like here's my point too. People love ripping on dead people or tearing apart dead people or telling bad stories about dead people. No one's walking around going, Vince Neil killed somebody.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but he did.
Yeah, but no one's walking up and going, Vince, remember when you killed that dude? But when Vince Neil dies, you better believe it'll be everywhere. The only person anyone had the balls to talk about killing someone while they were alive was Teddy Kennedy.
Sure.
And it was Republican. That's different. They'll use anything against you.
It's war, yeah.
Right, but like no one talks about... You know, when people are alive, Frank Langella wrote a biography last year. You know Frank Langella, the actor.
Yeah, sure.
Academy Award nominee. I think he may even have won. I don't remember. But I'm not an awards guy. But Frank wrote this book that's really entertaining, but he basically shits on all these people. The caveat, they're all dead.
Okay.
So Frank, even at his old age, didn't have the balls to talk shit about anyone alive. Just all these dead people.
Just all the dead ones.
Yeah, you could read it. It's on the. They have... excerpts on the internet and stuff, and they talk about how Frank basically, and I read the book, and these excerpts and these articles aren't lying. Yeah, Frank talks a lot of shit, and it's all about dead people.
It'd be the manager's deal saying, hey, don't talk shit about the people that we might end up seeing again.
I don't know.
Let's, remove those bits of the book. I don't know.
Honestly, I don't know. And for those people just tuning in now, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron. I'm here with Andy Dare. We're at my mom's house again. Unfortunately, not Tay Chicago. I'm very sorry for that. 603 North Hollywood Way in Burbank, California, though. Stop by and get Joe Montagna and Arlene Montagna's fantastic food. Peter Seagal is joining us, I believe, in 15 minutes. We're going to talk about the new film Grudge Match. We're going to talk about Tommy Boy. We're going to talk about working with Adam Sandler and Jack Nicholson, and it's going to be, I think, a really good interview. I never got into this to do interviews. Like, I use that as a selling point because I don't consider myself an interviewer. I still don't.
No.
I don't know. I have conversations. But I will say this. We're on, like, 178 episodes now, I think, getting up there.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm feeling old. And I'll tell you something. These conversations have just gotten better and better. I mean, I really think, at least with directors, we may have the best conversations going on the radio with directors. I mean, I think we ask very great questions. And it's not just me. Everyone that does this show asks great questions. And I believe the directors give some of their best interviews with us. So I'm really appreciative of that. I love that. So I'm really looking forward to having Peter on.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think an interview, you should not think about it as an interview. Think about it as talking to a guy who has an awesome career that you're interested in, and it'll make it easier for you. Don't think of it as like a school assignment or something like that.
And I also want to thank, while we're doing these thanks, while I'm doing this film, it's just been kind of stressful for everybody because we're so spread thin. I want to thank Pat Tobias for continuing to book this show without hearing from me as much, and Cesar Marconi, who continues to produce this show and keeps our website up to date. And
it's a gorgeous website. I was just telling
thank
him.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you to Cesar. He's great, and he's done a great job for us. And so I do want to thank those guys because I've been spread really thin, and I've not been as available to talk and to and even to be a friend. Like, I haven't been available to hang out. I'm doing like 12-hour days here, man, and it's and 2-a-days at the gym. And so it's like that's like 15, 16 hours of my day. I get maybe 4 or 5 hours of sleep, and if I have a social life, it's literally an hour or two. You know, I was talking about, because I'm putting all my money in this movie with a bunch of other people, and I'm talking about being broke the other day, because, you know, when all your money's tied up in something, even though you technically, air quotes, have the money,
sure,
it's tied up in something. So I was kind of like bummed out that I haven't been going downtown and hanging out. I've been going downtown a lot for meetings, but not hanging out and seeing my friends and hanging with Lenny and Mikey and all them. And when we have been hanging out, we've been getting like $5 meals and shit like that, you know. But I realized something. I'm glad I don't have that time because I don't have the money. It kind of works out. It kind of works out.
And it's not a time to be clubbing when you're in the middle of all this stuff. You're, you know, in the production plans of this movie, you know. The clubbing will always be there. You can always celebrate when this all gets through, you know.
But, yeah, we got to find something for you to do in this. Yeah. Even if it's small, I got to find something just to put you in.
I could help with the soundtrack. I'd love to pick songs or something like that.
Well,
I don't know if you're going to get what the plan is.
Yeah, I got licensing money right in my back pocket, Andy. I'll talk to you about that off the air because it's such a clever, not to rub my balls too hard, but it's such a clever idea I came up with for the music.
Nice.
That I think you'll be really impressed, and I think you could actually help me with it a little
bit.
Sweet. So,
and there's no Kickstarter. There's no thing they can fund.
No, and listen,
help fund.
I'm not against Kickstarter and
or go
stuff.
GoFund anything?
Yeah, I'm not against those things. It's just not my cup of tea. This is old school for me. This is, you know, I got the money through the people I know and
nice.
The people that really want to do this. And, you know, just taking money from people just still kind of rubs me personally the wrong way. I'm not saying I would never do that. So I don't want people to like annotate this clip and bring it back to
I
haunt
hate
me.
Kickstarter.
No, I'm not saying I would never Kickstarter. But I would have to have a very good reason. Like if funding ran out and I needed $2,000 to finish this movie, is Kickstarter an option? Absolutely.
Sure.
Do I need it right now? No. So I literally would not come out. I would literally not come to regular people for money unless we absolutely needed it.
Nice. Yeah, we've talked about that on my show quite a bit, the whole Kickstarter era that we're in, and you feel rude if you don't give them $5. Then if you just give them $1, all they give you in return is good vibes. I like that.
Yeah.
$1 will send you good vibes. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, listen, and that's the thing, too. I know if I put this on Kickstarter, I'll get the money. It's just...
Yeah. And then $15,000, Matt Aaron will cook you a 4-course meal, massage your mother or something, you know.
I'm the type of guy, though, that feels like, and tell me if you're the same, because I'm curious. I'm the type of guy that feels like, though, if you even give me $1 for my movie and then you hit me up for a favor in the future, I'm obliged to do it
sure,
for you.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's like I want to star in a $100 million movie, I'm like, oh, fuck, I got to figure out how to do this somehow. Oh,
nice.
So not proportional to what he gave me, but I'm that kind of guy where I got to do this for you. And it's like, I don't really want to owe 1,000 favors. I know Anthony Giuliano, my producer, he's the same way about it. He's like, all right, we're getting this shit free for the movie. What do I owe him?
Yeah.
And I go, what do you mean? He's like, favors. And I'm like, no. We're good. And he's always worried about favors. I think it's being Italian.
Sure.
And all the producers on this movie are Italian. I think as Italians, we're all like, favors mean a different thing in Italy, in the Italian vocabulary, than they do in the Hollywood vocabulary or like the real world vocabulary.
One hand shakes the other, right?
Yeah, right. So, yeah, and by the way, Cesar Marconi just sent me a great point from, he's in California right now, so he's still in L.A. doing work for us. He just sent me a great point. He goes, why would we need Kickstarter? The only people using Kickstarter are mega millionaires and big studios. He's kind of right.
He's true.
He's
yeah.
kind of right.
Yep.
That's the only project you ever hear about.
Yeah, it's rare to hear somebody just doing it themselves.
Man,
really,
Spike Lee's new movie. I know he just used Kickstarter and got the money for this new movie, but he just put out Old Boy, and it bombed like really, really. I think it made like $2 million. I'm not even kidding.
Dude's
it's such
having
a
rough
low
year,
number.
Right?
Yeah. You know what?
He shouldn't have put Zimmerman's address on.
Yeah, right.
That was not a good look.
And he's
Spike
stealing
Lee.
People's artwork, or at least the company that does Old Boy did it, and he didn't give a shit about it. Spike is. Listen, I really like Spike as a filmmaker. My problem with Spike is he's such a negative energy. Like, he just puts out negative vibes.
Sure.
He's so. And when I say controversial, I don't mean he causes controversy. I mean, he likes to fight.
Sure.
Everyone is out to get him. He's always like the little man. It's like, dude, you have a $30 million house in the Hamptons. You're not the little man anymore. I don't care how you feel. You ain't the little man
anymore.
When you got a $30 million house in the Hamptons.
It's true. And after Do the Right Thing, I mean, he got
great movie.
He Got Game was a great movie.
Great movie.
But last 10 years, I mean, name
Inside
me a
Man.
Yeah, Inside Man.
And that's probably
maybe.
It, right? And that was 2005, 2006?
Happens to all, lots of artists when they hit 50 years old, it seems like.
Well, I mean, here's the thing we got to remember. I have great ideas right now. My first four or five movies, people may be like, wow, those are great stories. He's such an original storyteller and a good filmmaker and blah, blah, blah.
Nice.
You get older, you make more money, you get busier, you spread yourself a little thinner. You're less involved in the real world like Woody and Spike,
sure.
Okay? Because you now live in this high life world. So you're not relating so much to the Andy Dares and the Matthew Aarons. You start to run out of relatable stories.
Sure.
You have to start creating stuff that you hope and pray is relatable, but you've not lived in a long time, if at all. So you got to realize these filmmakers, the reason there's an expiration date on those kind of guys is they started out telling really personal stories that were really great. Why there is not an expiration date on Marty Scorsese is Marty's never told a story that's personal to Marty's life. Marty's told stories, other people's personal stories, and he keeps finding great stories from other people, and Marty's a great guy. Marty is great at finding a story and making a great movie. Spike's got to create his own stories. Woody's got to create their own stories. They don't go out and find Goodfellas or Casino or Wolf of Wall Street. Those are three biographies that Marty went out and made in the films.
Departed,
which is a remake, but it was a remake of a great series of films in China. So we have to remember that these auteurs, like Woody and Spike, and they'd be pissed and argue this point, I'm sure, but these auteurs run out of interesting stuff to say because they're now millionaires and they're high class, and let's just be honest, most of the country isn't, and they don't relate to it.
And, I'm sure his lifestyle does Mikey in the building.
I may let him do the show a little. You want to go sit over there and do the show? Bye-bye.
What's up, dude?
Bye-bye. 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 See ya. Doing something. You see this? See this microphone thing? Yeah, a little busy. Little busy. Wait, you don't fucking tell her I'm a little busy? Why'd you even let her down here? What good are you? 400 pounds and nothing. That's what you are. You're a 400-pound skinny girl.
You know what?
You're a 400-pound skinny girl.
Is that what I'm a 402-pound valley girl.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
See what happened? LA did this to me.
What's up, dude? What's up? What's going on? Pretty good.
Yeah, Andy, you remember Mikey? Mikey, Andy? No?
I was
Andy
here last
wants
summer
you,
or something.
Andy wants you to come into the studio and do a little Christmas thing, I guess. What's the deal? What's your plan?
It's called A Very Maddie Christmas.
Oh, talk about what happened. Tell everyone the story. Go ahead. I just did your show the other day.
Yeah. So we're talking holiday music. We're talking top five songs. And Matt's got an interesting list. I got an interesting list. And, I'm working out of a new studio in Westmont, Illinois, called Venue Without a Venue. Co-run by Kevin Matthews, radio legend, and
a couple
other people.
He's doing stuff with Kevin Matthews.
That's awesome.
So, right?
Yeah.
I went to this new studio, Mikey. I did Andy's show, which is going to be up Friday at midnight.
Saturday at midnight,
whatever.
Central. I saw you taking the selfie with the blue screen.
Yeah. So what happened was I go to the studio, and no offense, here's what it looked like, because he gives me the address. It's a jewelry store out front, and I go, I'm thinking to myself, peekaboo, you motherfuckers, you. I'm thinking casino. I go, this guy's got a little shop set up in a jewelry store. He's watching the FBI. I'm thinking like Pesci.
I'm running
he
numbers.
Goes, no, come by the back. Come around the back. There's a building behind the jewelry store. So I go into this thing. Man, there's like 8 people working there. They got a setup. I mean, this is a professional fucking studio. I walk in. It's as good as Shira Lazar's out in Hollywood.
You were saying
it's
that.
It's as good as, who's the other person in Hollywood
Funny
doing?
Funny or Die.
Funny or Die. Yeah. Yeah, Funny or Die studio, not much different than yours. I'll even tell you this. Funny or Die studio, kind of messier than yours. At least it was clean. And these guys that produce his show, nicest guys ever and technically smart.
I have no idea on the tech side of all this. I just sit
in my
chair, and we're just looking at our phones, and they're messing with all the cameras. We had 3 cameras going, lavalier mics, you know.
Yeah, real professional.
The real deal. Yeah, I lucked onto this. It's all through Kev. Kev introduced me to those guys. And
they're great guys.
They're good
guys. They're fun to be around. They're not like Hollywood people who are nervous to talk. These guys all talk. They all joke around. They all kid around. I'll tell you this. Being on Hollywood sets and being in Hollywood studios and TV studios, people are so timid and afraid they're going to do something that'll get them fucked or lose their jobs. That it's so quiet and the atmosphere is like real tense. This was so relaxed and fun and done well.
Yeah.
It was still, you guys proved that you don't have to have that tense atmosphere to do a good show.
Yeah.
It was just as good as any show I've ever been a part of. And yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. And if you guys want to do something out of there, just let us know, and we'll hook you up.
Listen
you know?
To that. So, the Matthew Aaron Show on the web TVs.
Yeah,
I don't know if the public's ready for that.
Yeah, I'll
have yourself a very Matty Christmas.
Hold on, I can see. That's what he looks like.
Yeah, right.
Is that Lenny?
I would do
That's
it with
that Mike guy. Oh God,
I would do it without pants. I'm not gonna wear pants if I do that.
I don't ever wear pants.
Well, I know you're on
I
the.
Mean, if it wasn't for going to jail. Oh.
You're on the radio. You don't need pants.
Yeah. So the set list or the set looks like straight out of Conan or something like that.
My buddy commented on that, and I said it to you when I walked in. When they put up the green screen, the Christmas tree, I go, "It's so Conan."
Yeah, I joked. I said, "I'm the ginger Conan," and I was, "What? Oh, that's the same thing." Right?
Yeah. No, Andy sometimes has dumb blonde moments.
Yeah, I do. I for sure do.
My favorite is. So Andy's not used to doing the TV yet.
Oh,
so
I'm
he's not looking
red.
At the camera.
Oh, I'm doing the camera.
No, well, yeah, there's no makeup, so he's bright fucking red like a fucking apple, like a fucking tomato. Yeah, he's a skinny high C guy.
Did you hear what the Mexicans in my restaurant call me? They call me the camarones, the shrimps.
Yeah, right.
The red shrimps.
So he's never looking at the camera. So you'll watch this show Saturday.
Great.
I'm going to make people look for this. And you'll see Andy barely looks at me. And he's looking somewhere.
At myself.
He's looking
at
the computer screen, and you're looking at the TV screen.
Looking at
you're
myself.
Looking at yourself on the TV screen. And I don't want to embarrass him on the show, but I'm like.
You should have just been, hey, look up.
I'm on the screen. Yeah. I can't do that. I would have made you look bad. And so afterwards, we're like busted his chops. We're like, you've got to look at the camera.
Yeah. It's a work in progress.
Yes,
sure.
Yes, but you'll kill it at some
point. We'll get it.
You won't be replacing Ron Majors anytime soon.
Not yet.
I wish, yeah.
You're not Ron Majors good looking.
Oh, no. He is.
That is
he's
a good looking 128-year-old man
He won an award a couple of years ago.
For being good looking?
No, from the Italian American Society.
I thought he was Colombian or something.
Everyone's won an award from them by now.
Well,
if you have 10% Italian in you. If you have 10% Italian in you, you're in the Italian American Hall of Fame. Taylor.
That's Chet Kopic. When I was talking to Chet, he's all up. I'm like, Chet, that's because the Italians liked you for 10 years.
Yeah, right. Because Chet Kopic's the least Italian.
I don't see any in Chet. Yeah.
He's
1-8.
Go ahead.
He thinks my name is Gino.
Okay? Nice.
I've met him 10 times. He's Gino. I'm like, it's Mike. You look like a Gino, so I'm going to call you Gino.
So are you prepped? You got any questions for Peter Seagal? No.
Hey, let's talk about the new project.
Mikey's no, I got no questions. Do you at least want to see Grudge Match, Mikey?
He made Grudge Match? That's great.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we should talk.
He doesn't even know what our guest has done. Nice. He's
I'm kidding.
He made Grudge Match?
I'm kidding.
What is this Tommy Boy you speak of?
Yeah, Gilbert Godfrey.
I actually did read the synopsis before I came
Of Tommy Boy? Are you going to see it one day, Mikey?
Peter Seagal.
Callahan Motors. Yeah, or
no, I read about all the movies he did with Sandler. And,
oh, okay. I was going to say, I love how he looks like the Chris Farley bobblehead I have from Tommy Boy, but Mikey, I guess, has never seen the film. No? Have you
never?
Seen Tommy Boy?
Never.
I've seen Tommy Boy.
Like 100 times?
You haven't? Jesus Christ. You know how many people thought I was Tommy Boy growing up?
Oh,
I
bet.
The Maniac scene.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah. I had it down pat.
Did you do it in gasoline?
Not usually.
No, okay. Not usually.
Hey, I actually didn't eat paint chips as a kid, okay?
Yeah, good. Good. I'm glad you didn't eat paint chips.
I was Tommy Boy in Advanced Math and Trigonometry.
Oh, man.
How about the Black Sheep? Did he do that one? Or
no? He got lucky.
He got, okay.
I think it was the woman that did Wayne's World. What's her face? Gotcha. Penelope Spheeris.
Okay. Huh.
Black Sheep, not so good.
Not so good, but
it's
some
not
good,
Tommy
there's,
Boy.
There's yeah, grunge
think,
moments on there, like Mud Honey
is,
plays.
There is, yeah. But there's like, I don't think there's one person that will ever say to you, Black Sheep's better than Tommy Boy.
No.
Have you ever
no.
heard that in your life?
No.
Okay, no. Definitely yeah, not. No. I mean, I could make an argument, but they're totally different movies, that Tommy Boy and Dirty Work are kind of in the same atmosphere.
Very underrated movie, Dirty Work, yeah.
Really underrated. Underrated. I think the older I get, and the more I appreciate how dirty that movie really is, even for being PG-13. Yeah. I think Peter's calling in now. We're going to see. Hello?
Hey there. Hold on one second. We have Peter on the other line.
We got Peter.
Peter, you're on.
Hello?
Peter.
Hello there.
This is Matthew Aaron. You're sitting in also with Michael Turzo and Andy Dare. How are you doing?
Okay, how you doing?
We've just been talking about you.
Uh-oh.
That's right. First of all, really pumped for Grudge Match. You got an amazing cast, as usual. You always get amazing casts. I guess with that kind of money, you can. You got Sly, you got De Niro, you got Kevin Hart, you got Alan Arkin, and Kim Basinger. You got a pretty good cast there.
Yeah, we got very fortunate, very fortunate.
Well, let me ask you, when did this project start to come together? Tell me about how this project came together. And how you got involved?
Well, it was about 2-ish years ago. I was given the script, and it was a very different tone at the time. But there was something in it that I really liked. It was very kind of jokey, not very grounded. But there was an element to it that I responded to, and that was about these broken relationships and second chances. And I knew that even though it was going to be a comedy, by the time we got to the final fight, we had to take it seriously because a silly fight, I think, just would have not worked. And so when we discussed that, there really seemed to be only two people who could be appropriate for that and pull it off, and that was, you know, really threading the needle type of casting, getting Robert De Niro and Sylvester Stallone, two of the most iconic cinematic boxers in history. And
right.
So while that was a nice idea, there was a double-edged sword because it became the only twosome that the studio would even consider greenlighting the movie with. So that became the challenge, getting those guys.
So was it ever, though, presented to you as, okay, we need to get the two most iconic boxing actors of all time, De Niro, Raging Bull, Sly, Rocky. Was it planned out that way, or was it just happenstance that came about?
It was not planned that way. And as a matter of fact, when I read the script, I said, you know who would be good for this? Dot, dot, dot. And then I signed on to the movie, and it was leaked out to the internet that I was doing it. And then suddenly the chat rooms started to fill up with all of their guesses. And suddenly you started seeing all over the internet, you know who this should be, you know who this should be. It should be Rocky Raging Bull. And suddenly, you know, it was sort of confirmation about my own instinct, and that's what we sort of presented to the studio, saying, look, everyone's sort of in agreement here. This seems to be like the slam dunk. But it's not like the movie script was ever written with those two in mind. It was not.
So it was kind of like a crowd kind of almost got those two for you instead of...
A little bit, mob mentality, you know, and all of that support. And, you know, it's nice when
happen.
You work on a movie. Sorry, go
that's
ahead.
That's something that wouldn't happen, you know, 10, 20 years ago where everybody in the country can kind of, hey, let's try these two people in the film. Could
exactly.
this be So
it's the internet. You know, it's everything's changing.
How,
you know, they'll have an opinion about who plays what superhero, just like they'll have an opinion who's in your boxing movie, you know?
Peter, how much has the internet influenced you as a director throughout the years? Because I find this interesting. You started directing with Tommy Boy. Your first film, at least, was Tommy Boy, correct?
No, first film was Naked Gun 33 and a third.
Naked Gun, that's right, 33 and a third, and then it was Tommy Boy. Okay, so Naked Gun was like 94. So, okay, you have 94 to 2013. Obviously, the internet began around then and now has taken off to be this huge thing. What has changed from the beginning of your career as a director to now when it comes to the internet? How has that influenced you, if at all?
Well, it's a good question. First of all, there was no Rotten Tomatoes. So, you know, you only basically knew what the reviews were in your hometown. And then you would get a stack of Xeroxes from, and if you were fortunate enough to sift through the foot-high stack of Xeroxed reviews from around the country, you know, great. You know, Rotten Tomatoes, when it came in, suddenly movie reviews were reported every Sunday night like sports scores. And that changed. Because it was almost, you would get these, you know, congratulatory comments from friends who hadn't even seen the movie yet, but said they looked at the scores and you scored well, you know?
Oh, man.
And then, as of today, you know, I mean, it's changed so much because now, just since my last movie a few years ago, which was Get Smart, now everything is, you know, critically praised or critically panned, in, you know, on the internet, like even the release of a poster. You know, oh, I love it. I love her hair. Oh, I hate his eyes. And it's that didn't used to be. You used to have to just walk up to a poster in your theater lobby, and that was it.
Do you find Rotten Tomatoes has actually been a detriment in a way because most of these critics don't have the credentials to really be critics?
Yes. I mean, a lot of times your score is based on, you know, some guy who has a blog out of his mother's basement, and you say, well, I'm not sure how valid that is.
That's about this show. That's the show. I'm not sure how valid this show is.
Maddie, that was
a minor. Yeah, right. That was right. Well, no, and that's my point, too, Peter, is it affects your score. And I know they have that top critic section now, which kind of helps. It's for the people that don't do it from their basement.
Yeah.
But most regular people don't know to go to the top critic section or whatever. They just want.
No.
I know a lot of people that go Rotten Tomatoes, they just look at the number and click off. They're like, it got a 42%. We're not going.
Yeah.
And they don't even read any of the reviews.
Yeah. And, you know, exactly. And so it's unfortunate. You know, the thing that I always, you know, get bothered by when a critic says he sits in the theater. You know, I've had critics sit in a theater that I've been in, and the crowd is laughing like crazy. And in their review, they'll say, not one funny thing in the movie. And I'm like, well, were you deaf? You know, how would you describe all the people around you, how they felt?
Yeah, well, I think the proof's kind of in the pudding, too, because I believe you have like $600 million films in a row, Peter. So I think you're making funny movies, man.
Well, thanks. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you're doing okay. And that's the other thing. I don't think Rotten Tomatoes is affecting you too much. But let me ask you about this. How has tracking and marketing movies changed in that time period as well? Has that changed?
Well, tracking has gotten more accurate, so to speak. And then every now and then, though, you'll see a complete, you know, miscalculation in what people are predicting for either pro or con. Certain movies that are not supposed to do well that bust out huge, and then one must ask, was that from people tweeting, you know, and texting each other? I still am not 100% sure, you know, how word travels so quickly. A lot of it is that, but I personally don't come out of a theater and instantly go online to tell the world about it. I talk to, you know, my wife or my kids or whatever, and, you know, that's that. But, you know, it certainly has had an influence, you know, on viewing patterns, you know.
Yeah, so let me ask you, Grudge Match, this is, I sense this has, even though it's got Kevin Hart and it's a comedy, I sense this has a little more heart and drama than most of your films do.
Yes.
literally has heart.
Right. Yeah. Right. Was there a reason that is that something that really drew you to this, that you wanted to have that in one of your films?
Well, it you know, I've done all different kinds of comedies. Naked Gun is sort of a joke book. Tommy Boy is sort of a dumb guy comedy. There's been romantic comedies, sports comedies, political. This one to me felt like it just needed to be more grounded. You know, I did not want this to be grumpy old boxers.
Yeah, right.
And that's why, you know, even if they were alive, I never would have asked, you know, Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau to be in this movie, because that would be a different kind of movie, and I don't think people would have taken it seriously. You know, so Bernard Hopkins, as an example, is about to turn 49, and he's still yeah. kicking butts. You know, and so it's and I have to say, if you got in a ring with either Sly or Bob, you know, especially how much you know, how serious Bob took it in getting in shape. He lost 30 pounds. He could do 100 pull-ups in one workout. I mean,
Woo!
These guys, you know, and I'm not kidding. That's the truth. So I mean, this needed to be. It was a very specific kind of casting to make this work. You know.
Mikey, did you hear that? Bob De Niro does 100 more pull-ups than you do in a workout.
He does 96 more pull-ups than I do.
All right, okay. But the man's 70.
Well, here. But how many 400-pound guys do you know that can do more than one pull-up?
One. You. Nice. That's about it.
There's my justice. I'm good now.
Let me ask you. You got on board. So this started 2 years ago. When did Kevin Hart become involved? Because it's obvious you got on board the Kevin Hart train before Hollywood caught on. So explain to me what made you guys cast Kevin Hart and how that came about.
Well, originally the role of Dante, which was sort of our Don King type of person, was written for an older gentleman. And yeah. once we started, you know, getting our top choices, literally every first pick we got, we realized, wait a minute, before we go ahead and cast, you know, an older guy, you know, maybe we should concentrate on infusing a little youth into the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's when the idea of Kevin came up. You know, besides Kevin, we also have John Bernthal in the movie, who you're going to see pretty soon in Wolf of Wall Street. He's fantastic. Yeah. He plays De Niro's son.
And Mob City, which premieres tonight,
yeah, Mob City he's in. And he's also shooting a film right now with Brad Pitt, a World War II tank epic in Europe, right?
He did Snitch earlier this year with Dwayne Johnson, which I thought was a good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
This guy is going to be a star. He's fantastic and a great guy. And so between the two of them, you know, we really got very lucky, you know, because we not only injected some youth in the movie, but we got, you know, two great performances and one hilarious guy on top of that, you know.
That's great. So Kevin Hart, you wanted to inject youth, but did you guys ever have the conversation that it could make for really great banter with Alan Arkin? Because Alan, obviously, someone you've worked with. I know, and I want to ask you about Alan Arkin, because I know a lot of, you know, stories about Alan. But Alan Arkin, I'm sure you had him first or in mind. Did you think, hey, Kevin and Alan Arkin, that would be great?
Yes. That's one of the main reasons we went to Kevin, because you know, once I secured Alan in the movie, and it wasn't easy at first. His reps weren't 100% sure that he would respond to it, and so I reached out to him and I said, look, you know, no harm, no foul. If you don't like it, no biggie. You know, we'll do something else. And I described it to him and went, uh-huh. He was a little dubious just of the description. And then when he read it, he called me back, and I'll never forget. He said, you know, Pete, this is one of the great roles I've been offered. This is wonderful. I'm so excited. So, you know, once he was in, we said, okay, we really got to match him up. You know, his adversary, who is Dante Jr., the character, we got to have a good adversary here, and that's why Kevin seemed to be the perfect guy.
No, it's great. Alan Arkin does not like being directed by most of the directors I'm friends with who have worked with him. Do you have any funny Alan Arkin stories about him blowing off your directions?
You know, well, absolutely. There are too many to count. No, the thing about Alan is that I love is Alan, and this is perhaps why I get along so well with him. He completely reminds me of my father. And so when he gets, persnickety about something, I react to him like I would my father when he was alive, and I'm like, oh, come on. And I say, ooh, I shouldn't say that to Alan Arkin. But he responds, because then he treats me like a normal person, and suddenly we've had a very, no BS kind of relationship over the past several years, which I love, and I think he really appreciates, because, I'm absolutely want to hear every, thought he has in his head about the character, or any, idea he has about, tweaking a line or whatever. But there'll be times when we say to each other, oh, come on, yeah. And I think we appreciate that, the candor.
One of my good friends, I won't say who to embarrass him, but one of my good friends directed Alan twice and then acted in a movie with him. And he said the two or three times he directed him, he goes, why does Alan gotta be such a pain in the ass? And then when they acted together, they were like the best of friends. Like Alan was like his best friend ever.
Yeah.
And that's so funny, because it's obvious Alan Arkin doesn't do it to be a dick. He just has his he has his way.
No, well, he's very thoughtful about, everything he does, and he's very picky. He can be picky, I mean, he's offered everything, and he doesn't have to do anything anymore, He's got his Oscar. He can... Yeah. But it was very funny, because he literally had about four notes after he read the script, little line tweaks, and I said, that's it? That's all you have? He goes, no, I have to say, it's a wonderful script, wonderful script. Then we get on the set, and almost every day, Pete, this line here, that just does not work. I can't say that this does not work at all. I'm like, wait a minute, I thought you had only four notes on the entire script. Now every day there's a note on a line.
Did he do that with Get Smart, too? Is that just
He and Carell would crack each other up. I mean, those guys together just were giddy. And it was so fun to watch. And half the time I didn't know why they were laughing at whatever they were laughing at, but they, it was just hard to try to get them to focus on the scene. One flub of a line, and they were off for 5 minutes laughing. They loved each other.
What do you do to prepare actors for roles before shooting? When you're in pre-production, how do you get actors to prepare for their roles? Is it something that changes with each film, or do you have like a way set how you deal with the actors beforehand?
It really is film to film. Every actor is different. Some actors like to rehearse. Some actors hate to rehearse. Eddie Murphy, for example, is sort of from the Jackie Gleason school of, if I rehearse, it's not going to be funny anymore. It's not going to be fresh. I'd rather do it for the first time as the camera's rolling. And I get that. Other people love to rehearse. They can't find the character unless they work it out, ahead of time. So for this film, I spent a lot of time working on the script with Sly, really customizing it to his, liking, and same with Bob. Bob really, really gravitated toward this very early on. He recognized that there was an opportunity here. There was a gravitas to the role, but there was also a lightness to it, and a wink at his most iconic role as Jake LaMotta, which he won an Oscar for. And he had been used to doing that because he winked at The Godfather with Analyze This.
Right.
Sly had not done that before, and so it took a little more effort and convincing and rewriting to get Sly to realize that, adding comedy, to your resume at this stage of your career could really, elongate your career. You don't have to be carrying a machine gun in every movie.
Yeah. That's true. It's great to see Sly do a comedy again finally after years of not, because he's a funny guy. He's got a good sense of humor in movies.
He's very funny, yeah. And a lot of people don't know that. And literally after our first test screening, he was so gratified. He said, oh, my God, we've got a hit, and I didn't even have to hold a gun in my hand. So
nice.
Mikey, did you have something?
No, I was just going to say, I thought Sly started doing comedy when he came out with The Expendables.
Yeah, The Expendables. Oscar was, I think Oscar's an underrated film. I liked it. I like the Oscar. I'm that guy. I'm that guy. I like the Oscar. Peter, let me ask you, you've worked with some iconic people. First of all, let me ask you about Adam Sandler, because Adam Sandler is known, at least in Hollywood circles, as being a guy who keeps hiring, you know, people, well-respected directors like a Dennis Dugan, but he's known as being very hands-on with the directors on a set. Was he hands-on with your films? Because you have a pedigree, and Dennis's pedigree is mostly with Adam. So is it different when you're directing with Adam? Does he let you do your thing?
I think it's always a little different. Obviously, he has a very, you know, shorthand relationship with Dennis and with Frank. Each have done a few movies. It was a little different, you know, with me. As a matter of fact, I'm heading off to his Hanukkah holiday party in a couple of hours tonight, so I'm going to see him. But
last
we had a very nice working relationship. Yeah. Pardon me?
Were you there last year when he had Jackson Brown, and Jackson Brown was playing last year at his holiday party?
I was out of town last year. Last year's I missed. But, no, there's always some big surprise, so I have no idea what's going on tonight.
Oh, so you don't know what's going on tonight. But so for Adam, it's a little different. What was the, for instance, when you're doing anger management, and you got to work with powerhouses like Adam and Jack Nicholson, what is that like?
Well, I mean, first of all, that, you know, Jack had approval over the director on that one, and so I was, you know, fortunate enough to be selected to go in there. But, you know, that was an unbelievable experience. Very few people can suck the oxygen out of a room when they walk in like Jack. And, you know, I think everyone was a little off balance in a good way on that movie. Everyone was nervous to work with Jack. Jack was nervous to be doing a comedy with Adam. But Jack had young kids at the time who were huge Sandler fans, and so he's a smart guy, obviously, and he realized, hey, this is an opportunity to tap into a whole new audience, you know. And so when we got together, you know, everyone was really on their game, and it was, you know, a really delightful process. But it was intimidating because every time, you know, I looked him in the eye, I went straight to color bars because, you know, I couldn't concentrate, you know. You just
see every
role that he's played, you know, morph across his face.
Was it hard to get Jack to do that over-the-top type of comedy?
Well, we tried to contain it and not have it be that over-the-top. But, for example, a tricky scene was the two of them singing on the bridge, I Feel Pretty. And I knew, though, if we could get that one scene, you know, even close to how I had it in my head, then we'd really have something. And those two guys that day, it was, I mean, obviously we know that Adam can sing, you know, he's a very good singer. Jack, I had never heard singing before, so it was going to be interesting. And he didn't have to sing well, but he had to, like, take the spirit of the scene and run with it, and they did. It's one of my favorite scenes I think I've ever shot.
He did a song in Something's Gotta Give, but it got cut out of the movie.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's a true story. He did La Vie en Rose, and it got cut out of the movie, I'm sure, just because there was no room for it, I'm sure.
If he had done I Feel Pretty, it might have made it.
Right, exactly.
Was Jack picked for that because he's had issues with his anger? Was that anything that had to do with the casting of that?
Oh, absolutely. I think the whole golf club to the car window episode certainly made him a perfect candidate for the movie. And then we wrote a scene, an homage to that, which at the last second he said, I don't think I want to use the golf club. And we thought, uh-oh, we're dead. We should wrap up. We're going home. This is like one of the big reasons, you know, we did the movie, you know, to pay off that moment. And he said, but how about if I use a baseball bat instead? And I was like, are you kidding? Great. Roll them.
Let's do it.
So let's also talk about Mikey and Andy and I. We've been talking about this, and Chucky's now here, and we are the biggest fans of the film Tommy Boy, which is actually like Peter's lowest grossing film. Hate to bring that one up, but I'm sure on DVD it's killer.
I just have to interject. What the cool thing about that is that a few years ago, when it was the 10th anniversary, Paramount called me and said they wanted to do a 10th anniversary edition. I said, oh, that's so nice. I didn't think you'd want it for this. It didn't make that much money in the theaters at the time. It was like 30-something million or whatever. It cost 15, so it was profitable. I said, are you kidding? This is a top 10 for us at Paramount. I said, what do you mean top 10? You mean in home video? I said, yeah, top 10 in home video. I said, what, this year? And they said, no, in our history. I said, wait a minute. Are you talking about with Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Godfather? Yeah. So it actually made a killing.
Wow.
Home video.
I own 3 DVD copies of that film and a Blu-ray. So I can.
There you go.
The 4 of those copies of the top 10 films ever in Paramount's home library. Isn't that, that's amazing, Mikey. I didn't know that. I knew the film cult-wise was really popular, but.
Well, I think through the mid-90s into the 2000s, one thing that I think kind of really changed from the 80s and 70s and 80s and before that was is the ability for something to come out to theater. And then even if it didn't do well in the theater, it could gain so much traction on video with that younger generation. I mean, look what happened with Family Guy. It was canceled.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
that's right.
You didn't see that happening 30 years ago.
No, that's really
true. Right.
That's right. So when you're making this film with Chris Farley, and this was during his better days from everything I've read and heard, what was it like working with Chris and David Spade, who I think is like one of the funniest guys ever?
Well, when we started that, I had done by the time we started that, I had worked with Chris twice. Once on an HBO special with Tom Arnold, and another time. And then when Tom's sitcom was on the air right after Roseanne, it was called The Jackie Thomas Show. Chris did a cameo.
Yeah.
And then I knew after those two times working with Chris that he was by far the funniest guy I'd ever met, and that I was desperate to do his first starring role in a movie. Up till that time, he had done things like Coneheads and Airheads and things with air and heads in the title. And so I was given a very unfinished, rough script of a movie at the time that was called Billy the Third, a Midwestern. And they changed the title because at the same time, Sandler was filming Billy Madison, and they didn't want two SNL guys with Billy's in the title. So we came up with Tommy Boy. But there was not a complete script. Yeah.
Really?
No, we started shooting the movie with 66 pages. And we kind of blew it because it took us so long getting a script together that we wanted to shoot in the summer in between, you know, during the hiatus of SNL, but we blew it and we started shooting simultaneously with SNL. So we only had Dave and Chris for like 3 days a week, and the other 3 days they were shooting SNL and then one day just to travel. So that was a blessing because those 3 days that we were not filming the movie, I would be writing the script with Fred Wolf, who was at the time the co-head writer of SNL. So Fred would spend half his days working on SNL and half his days working on Tommy Boy. And we would just include things from our lives and Chris's life into the movie. Like one day, for example, he comes up to Spade with a new sport coat on. This is off camera, and he says, hey, Dave, does this suit make me look fat? And Spade says, no, your face does. And I said, oh, my God, we got to write that down. It's got to be in the movie somewhere. Piece by piece, we started putting things together for, you know, and then Fat Guy in a Little Coat was a bit that Farley did at the SNL offices. He was roommates with Spade in an office, and then Rock and Sandler were roommate office mates in another office, and he would always do that. And we said, and they told us about it. I said, oh, that's funny. We should put that in the movie. And bit by bit, that's how that movie came together.
Wow, that's great. How does a studio sign off on letting you guys shoot a movie that has 66 pages?
You know what? It's a very interesting question. Remember who our producer was. It's Lorne Michaels, man who starts every Monday morning with a blank sheet of paper and by Saturday has 90 minutes of live television. He was used to winging it. So, and he had that kind of confidence, and Sherry Lansing, then the head of the studio, had that confidence in Lauren. So if Lauren said, you know, don't worry, we'll have a full movie by the time we wrap, she said, okay. And fortunately, the movie didn't cost hardly anything, so it was not that big a risk.
How about this, like, Farley and Spade, they have, like, such a partnership. Was that built out of a friendship that was already there, or were they put together because they look, complementary to each other, or...
Oh, they had that friendship already. It was built in. And what was nice about Tommy Boy is unlike whether it was Wayne's World or Coneheads, it was an SNL-based story but not on any existing characters. It was really based on their relationship. And, Lauren felt from an early stage that, hey, let's capitalize on these personalities rather than certain characters and let's, you know, create screen characters rather than retrofit a television character onto the big screen.
What are some upcoming projects, Peter, that you're interested in doing? Do you have anything on the slate?
Yeah, we are a few things. One is we're developing Johnny Quest at Warner Brothers. I don't know if you remember cartoon from the 60s.
I remember. Is it going to be live action or a cartoon?
Yeah, live action. It's a big...
Cool.
Yeah, it's actually a very cool script written by Dan Mazo, who did, you know, Clash of the Titans, and it's, you know, big special effects, very cool. We're also working on a remake of Harvey that a young writer named Jonathan Tropper, who does Banshee, did a spectacular rewrite, an updating of the Jimmy Stewart movie from 1956, and a few other things, but those are sort of, you know, two of the...
Would Harvey be something you would direct, or is that just for your production company? Okay.
No, yeah, and, you know, depending on which one we get going first.
Okay, so both of them are on your slate. And Johnny Quest, is that a comedy, or is that going to be more of an action?
Yes, it's much more of an action movie. There's humor to it, but it's obviously, it's very grounded in the DNA of the original series, which, you know, inspired, among others, Brad Bird to make The Incredibles. He used Johnny Quest as a real, you know, role model for that kind of movie. And so it's inspired a lot of, you know, a lot of action films, you know, since then. So, you know, and this has been a long gestating project, you know, that finally we've got a pretty good script, and so we're trying to get the final pieces together.
Yeah, I love you as a director because it seems like each project you try to do something different. Even though you've been a comedy director, each comedy is a different type of comedy. So I think that's really impressive.
Well, thanks. You know, as a long time ago when I started out, it almost seemed like comedy should be something. This is how I felt the press looked at it. Was comedy was something that you start your career with, but then you quickly move away from and get into doing quote unquote real movies. But then, as you know, other directors have come along, whether it's the Farrellys or, you know, you name it, people realize, no, you can actually, you know, have a long career doing comedy as long as you mix it up. And that's what I've really tried to do, whether it's, you know, a joke book comedy like Naked Gun or more of a dumb guy comedy like Tommy Boy, or political comedies, action comedies, or sports comedies, as long as it's a different genre to keep it interesting. And this Grudge Match, you know, has more drama in it than I've done before, and heart, but it's really still a very funny movie, but again, a very different kind of comedy than I've done.
Is this true, by the way? This is something I've always read about My Fellow Americans with Lemon and James Gardner. Was it true it was supposed to be Matthau, but Matthau was sick?
No, as a matter of fact, at our original table read, it was supposed to be Steve Martin and Jack Lemmon.
Huh.
And Steve Martin came. Yeah, it was more of a – there was supposed to be an age difference between the presidents. It was kind of a Clinton-Reagan kind of thing. But then Steve changed his mind and didn't want to do it, and then so James Garner was cast. But, yeah, no, it was never intended to be Walter. I think those guys at that point had done so many movies in a row since Grumpy Old Men that I think it was starting to feel like it was, you know, straining the bolts and rivets.
I got to say, though, between those two and their later films, I think Out to Sea is like a really underrated classic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very funny movie.
I love it. It has a lot of heart, and Brent Spiner's in it, who I love. It's a good movie. Good Diane Cannon, and she really hasn't done anything since then. I love Diane Cannon.
I love how they're
on. Is she ever going to age, Diane Cannon? Ever? She looks so good. God bless surgery. Well, Peter, let's plug Grudge Match one more time. It comes out Christmas Day, correct?
Yes, sir.
You're like counter-programming against Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes, it's pretty much us and Dallas Buyers Club, you know, are duking it out for Best Picture. So,
I think you may have the edge. You may have the edge. Oh, by the way, Kim Basinger, that was a how do you pronounce it? It's like it changes all the time. Basinger.
I found the actual pronunciation is Basinger.
Basinger. Okay.
Not Basinger or the other eight ways I've pronounced it. Basinger.
She's looking fantastic in this film. We haven't seen her really in a while. Is that something? Did you guys have to convince her to do this because of?
Not since 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8 Mile, and she got nominated for that. Right. She's fantastic.
Ten years ago. Yeah.
So yeah. Did you have to convince her to do this, or is this just a thing where older actresses aren't getting offered a lot of roles anymore?
I think it's a little bit that, and also she read the script and really wanted to do it, and I think she felt like she had a little something to prove that she could also do a comedy. And I remember we met at Jerry's Deli in the Valley, and she just wanted to say, look, you know, trust me, I can do this. And she was great, and you know, she let her hair down and really wanted to, you know, do something fun for a change and not be so serious. And, you know, like I said, when you look at careers like, you know, Meryl Streep with Postcards from the Edge, or what De Niro did with Analyze This and then eventually Meet the Parents, I think, and this is one of the ways I convinced Sly to do the movie, I said, you know, if you can try something completely different and turn your career on its head, and it's successful, you can completely reach a whole new audience and revitalize your career, because you're not, you know, sort of pigeonholed doing the same thing. And that's why she wanted to be in it, to prove that she can do something else.
Well, two things. One, she's still looking like Vicki Vale good. LA Confidential.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's still looking real good. Two, if I had Peter Segal money, I'd be eating at Jerry's Deli, too. But I'm shocked that you had to convince Sly, though. And this happens all the time. This isn't just with you and Sly in this situation. I'm shocked. It's this Hollywood bubble that people live in. With so many great examples of people doing the total opposite of what they're known for and it working out so well, I'm shocked that we still have to convince actors to do that, because we see it here in the Midwest. We're like, oh, someone doing something totally different. That's great. We're going to go check it out. We want to see it. But in Hollywood, they don't. I don't know. I feel like everyone lives in a bubble out there from living out there. I feel like there's this bubble and not everything gets to them.
Well, it's terrifying for people to go outside their comfort zone and to do something completely different. It doesn't always work, by the way. You know, some people try to do something completely different and they crash and burn. And for every one of those examples, it's, you know, to the power of 10, you know, why someone doesn't want to do that again. So I love it, though, you know, when you can get someone. I even, you know, Paul Reiser, when he played the villain in Aliens, was really cool.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Going the opposite direction.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I think, you know, for a comedic guy to do a dramatic role and vice versa, you know, I agree with you. It would be nice to see more attempts like that. But then also, you know, studios who are making fewer movies these days, you know, they won't necessarily think of, you know, putting Anthony Hopkins or Helen Mirren in a comedy. And then that's what's so nice about a movie like Red when it comes out and you say, hey, I didn't think that they could do that, and they can, you know.
Well, just before I let you go, to give you an example, this is Peter Segal. Okay, Tommy Boy, you got Rob Lowe in a comedy, okay?
Yeah.
You got, in My Fellow Americans, James Gardner is one of the lead, okay? This is something you've always done. Burt Reynolds in The Longest Yard, you get Burt to do more of that 70s style, and he did the original Longest Yard, but you get him to do more of these outlandish comedies. Jack Nicholson, Anger Management. I mean, this is something you've always done. So you've always seemed to have had an interest in taking actors and watching them do something they haven't done before.
Well, in the case of Anger Management, the coolest thing in the world was when Jack said yes. Suddenly, the entire world was saying, Jack Nicholson and Adam Sandler together? I got to see that.
Movie?
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like, you know, whether it was either going to succeed brilliantly or crash and burn, you know, fantastically. But one way or another, you wanted to see it. And, you know, once we had those two, then the fun thing was everyone in the world wanted to be in that movie, you know, because they wanted to go along for the ride. And that's what's exciting, you know, when you can see someone do something different, it's a reason to pay your, you know, $10, I guess, and go and see them take a risk. You know, I think people get tired of seeing actors do the same thing over and over again. It's nice to see them switch it up.
I do have to say, Peter, and I know you're married with kids, so you could be humble about this, but you have great taste in actresses. Marissa Tomei, Kim Basinger, Anne Hathaway. I mean, I'm feeling it. That's pretty good. I'm always happy with your female lead choices, just so you know. I'm always happy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mike, you disagree?
I think one of my dreams in life is to go to New York and smoke a cigarette with Mr. Tomei outside dive bar.
A Marlboro Light,
yeah, right.
With a scotch outside some dive bar in 10-degree weather.
That'd be great.
Yeah,
see, we got the same.
I know, we do. Yeah. We do. Peter Sagal has always casted the best leading ladies. I can't think of a movie where I wasn't like, yeah, I like her. That's good. That's good.
Well, even though I'm a married guy now, I will give you guys one tip. Here's a line that you can use next time you're in a bar, okay? You sit at the bar next to an actress, and you say to the bartender, "You know, you sure can work up a thirst casting a major motion picture." See what happens.
That is good.
See what happens.
So, Peter, are you saying before you were married with children, you may have used the director card more?
Unfortunately, by the time I was directing, I was on child number two, so never got the chance to use it.
Well, it doesn't mean he didn't use it.
Yeah, it didn't mean you didn't use it. I mean, you pretended before that.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Peter. Grudge Match in theaters December 25th. Chucky, you got anything? Any Bob De Niro Sly questions? Come on, you love Sly. You got anything? Well,
I may ask the same question you guys already did.
Ask the same fucking question. What are you doing to me here, Charles?
So, how difficult was it, you know, obviously with Rocky to be like, "Hey, Sly, you're doing this in the boxing."
Oh, yeah, we talked about that. You're boring. Next, Andy, anything?
It's okay.
No,
Charles.
Just thank you so much for taking the time out. We appreciate it,
Mike.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. It was fun talking to you.
Thank you, great. Peter. I'll be seeing Grudge Match on the 25th. That'll be my Christmas, and I'll do it like a Jewish man. I'll go have some Chinese after.
Yeah,
so,
we'll go to the theater.
Thank you, Peter.
I'll be there with you.
We'll talk next time you got something to come on and talk about.
You got it, my friends. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, brother. All right.
Okay.
Peter Sagal.
He was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. That felt
nice.
Good.
That was a lot of fun.
That was fun.
Do you have an Adam Carolla mug in this?
He does.
I sure do.
He does.
Yeah.
Charles, you got to take over for me. I got to go pee.
Nice. Yeah, that was
You know
a lot
what
of
I want to know?
Yeah.
You know, speaking, he was talking about their remake in the movie from the 50s. You know what I'd like to know? When are they remaking Tootsie? I want to see a Tootsie remake.
Nice. Yes.
You know what I mean?
That is a highly underrated movie.
Oh, God.
I've never seen Tootsie.
You've never seen Tootsie?
I've never
Charles.
Seen Tootsie.
How have you never seen Tootsie?
I've just never seen it.
Do you secretly hate Dustin Hoffman? Is that what it is?
No. I just never seen it.
I can't be friends with
you. I saw that in high school.
After your text
school.
Yesterday, you can't be friends with me now?
That text never happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They played that at a sociology class I took in, like, freshman year of high school. So,
yeah. There was nothing sexual about it.
Oh, no, nothing at all. Yeah. But just... drag. I mean,
yeah, I know, but I mean, he had like a reason.
He had a reason.
I mean,
he had a motive.
I mean,
yeah,
listen, you can say the same thing about Mrs. Doubtfire, but
that's
I still love Robin Williams.
And that's not sexual.
And that was the most. He was the most manly, homely. Like I want him to be my grandma and grandpa at the same time. Movie I've ever seen.
Tootsie was more like I could see that being a lady, but yeah, Doubtfire not so much.
No, that's
not so much.
How
the fake Scottish accent for the old lady.
Dude, how great was
did
that?
Not do it for you.
My neighbor, who was an alderman in my town, actually took me to go see that movie when it first came out. So I was obviously considerably younger.
Wait, what are you talking about?
Mrs. Doubtfire. We moved from Tootsie to Mrs. Doubtfire.
Basically the same thing.
Well, you know, one they're a little different.
Tootsie's a better movie. Mrs. Doubtfire is still fun, though.
You know, I grew up loving Robin Williams, so there's some scenes in that movie to just crack me up.
But come on, better than Dusty Hoffman?
Dude, Charles has never seen Tootsie.
You've never seen Tootsie? You've never seen anything. Charles hasn't seen anything.
There is a lot
he's
of
seen,
movies that I have not
Red
seen.
Red Heat and not Tootsie. That's all you need to know. He saw Red Heat.
He's inside. That's he's seen the inside of Touch of Class. That's all I need to know.
Man, it kind of feels good to be back.
Oh, this is great.
By the way. You could sure work up a thirst casting a major motion picture.
Nice.
I feel like that works a little better in the Valley than it does out here.
I feel like...
I'm going to use it out here.
Well, regardless. T-minus 24 hours till Matt uses that.
Yeah.
Sure works up quite a thirst when you're casting a TV show.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Yeah, right.
Or you just
soda?
Real loudly sit at the bar, oh, I got to find a new actor for Chicago Fire this week. No, I'm just kidding, because they don't cast anyone from Chicago.
No,
you
right.
You can't use that here.
Yeah.
Maybe Toledo you can, or New York,
maybe,
but no one on that show is
from
UK. Chicago.
Maybe you can find somebody in London.
There's one person, Steve from Sex and the City, and that's all I know him by, Steve.
The fat guy with the mustache.
I don't watch
Chicago
that show. What fat guy? What mustache?
There's a firefighter. He's a fatter guy. He's got a red mustache. He's from Chicago.
I promoted that show when it came out. I like the people that do it. I liked the show at the beginning, and then it turned into this like really gay love story, and I can't watch it anymore.
Well,
it kind of is, right?
All I know.
Okay, I'm not right. It's really Chicago Flaming. But yeah,
I'm just happy that I cost them money because
you did.
Yeah, I cost them money. They were filming on Upper Randolph.
They
right?
got it, so don't worry.
No,
about
but
it.
Right in front. You know, JD has his condo over
yeah,
there.
Sure.
So we
sure.
came down to go to Wildberry for breakfast in the morning, and we're walking down the street, and we were just out of it. You know, and they're in the process of filming.
By the way, what's the John David motto real quick?
What?
The thing, his business motto that you always
say. Oh, cares?
No.
I can't remember.
There's another one.
No.
Oh, there's a funny one. Or maybe it's his answering machine. I don't remember. Maybe it was just funny in my head. Continue. Wow.
So anyway, so I'm sitting there. I'm like, oh, this must be some TV show they're filming. Well, unbeknownst to me, there's like going around the corner. There's scene. Everybody stops. We start getting screamed at.
Cut,
they were rolling film. We're like, you know, oh god.
Did they have it tapered off or anything? They didn't have it taped off.
We just walked through.
Really?
Yeah, we literally.
Oh, so they did have it taped off.
Yeah, we just walked through.
Because when you're in Chicago, you never know when tape is bullshit. Like, you never know when things are taped off and it's just the city ordinance bullshit or whatever.
And trust me, nobody was getting between me and my fucking pancakes, okay? I didn't care how long it was taken.
I can't believe they were open with it all taped off, though.
Everything was open.
Well, then
why
would you be open when no one can walk on your street?
Well, but because there's so the much. You understand? There's so many condos there.
So people just go downstairs out the door.
Right. I mean, it's in the the condo building. It's in. It's probably has 5,000 people in it.
Were you going to say, Charles?
That true Chicagoans just assume it's a murder scene there, and
they just walk right
through it. They don't care.
We walk over chalk outlines.
Well, you know, it's so funny because I realized afterwards when all the cars were backing up and like getting back in the same place they were at before, and it is what it is. But
all right, it's good. That's good. You fucked up Chicago Fire.
I'm happy about it.
I hope you fuck up Chicago PD.
A couple hundred bucks.
I'm sure no one from Chicago's on that show either.
Yeah, probably not.
Scott Eastwood, who everyone's creaming their pants over because he's good-looking and he's Clint's son, and he's from Pasadena, California, or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Or Pebble, wherever Pebble Beach is.
Right, because we don't have any good actors in Chicago.
You would think not. You would think not. I guess George Wendt's too fat nowadays.
Wait. He was doing the State Farm Double Down commercials.
And that's right after I'm kind of like, hey, love John the Sopranos, you know? Like, yeah, you know, because that's what I'm going to say. Or Home Alone. Whatever.
Right.
Or in any of those 90s thrillers he did with Goldie Hawn. So I go, hey! He drops his pizza. I made John Hurd drop his deep dish pie.
The whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. It's a mess. And by the way, I don't mean to embarrass Mr. Hurd, but it looks like he just woke up at 5 p.m. Oh. Hair all aflutter. He had stains on his white undershirt. I'm like, John, you just hit the catering table at the set, and now you're getting some deep dish? And he seemed very nice, but he seemed very caught off guard that some loud Chicago Italian man was yelling at him from the front of Joe Montaigne's restaurant.
Trust me, that restaurant was never as Chicago as it was when you were doing your radio show.
Well, there's a lot of guys that go there, like Dan Loria, Dennis Farina used to, God rest.
Terrible.
And now... We used to joke because they hung up a picture of Dennis Farina in a tux with a cocktail in his hand, and it's like basically like Dennis is watching you from heaven.
Oh, geez.
But it's kind of creepy.
As a matter of fact, on that
he'd
note,
always be looking down.
I want one right behind you.
Should we get a
Dennis? I want a Dennis Farina right behind you.
We'll get a Farina because you know that is that Dennis Farina is my second cousin removed.
Yeah, we've talked.
I met him on vacation one time.
Good
like
guy?
New, New Buffalo, Michigan.
Did you like him?
I just said,
what
hey, I enjoy
Dennis
your work.
What the fuck's Farina doing in New Buffalo?
He has family there, Farina and Renamix. No, he has like some family
that's
a lawyer.
You know how many Farinas there are, though?
Something.
There's a great pizzeria I ate at in New Mexico in Albuquerque. It's called Farina whatever.
What?
Oh, there's good pizza. There's good pie in Albuquerque.
It's also a cream of wheat or something, right? Farina?
Farina is the name of the actual... No, no.
They have an Italian restaurant, though, in New Mexico, is what I was saying, though. That's just... It's outstanding.
Is
it
an
really
Italian
good.
Name? Farina?
No, it's the name of like, the grind.
Yeah.
It's essentially cream of wheat, but they don't call it Farina as a name. Farina is actually named for it.
Correct.
Gotcha.
Correct.
Okay.
So, but you see the Farina names everywhere.
Right.
Joe Farina. Brady Joe over at Central.
Yeah, right.
Go eat at Central. I hear it's great. I haven't been yet.
You got to go. Maddie, you know, we can all just sit here and blow
well,
each
know,
other.
You know I love Joe.
I know.
But he's a legit great chef. He really
right.
is.
I mean, we can sit here and blow each other about it, but it legitimately is a solid
Listen,
restaurant.
If you ever ate at Rosebud on Taylor, you've had Joe Farina's food back in the day.
Central's better.
No, I know Central's better, but I'm talking when Joe Farina ran Rosebud.
Right.
He was outstanding, right?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay. So
how about this, Bing?
And they're giving Joe a little more freedom to do what he wants at Centro, from what I understand, which means it's going to be
they make a ragout in the house that they whip every
right,
day.
They're giving Joe like this freedom to do stuff.
You just go there, you get the Sunday salad, the meatball, and the whip ragout. You're good.
That good, huh?
It's that good.
How about this? How about Italy? Is that
Len
is
went a, the other day? He spent 5 hours there and probably $500. He says it's very expensive, but the food's great and it's fun.
Yeah.
But he says very expensive.
Let me put that in perspective for you. They have a lot of hard to find items there. So
right.
Okay. There's going to be a
Import.
Generality. Right.
Sure.
Yeah. So I went through.
New York.
I've been reading about Italy all day long. They have a pomegranate candle there. It's a small 6 ounce pomegranate candle.
Okay.
$30.
$47
for a 6 ounce candle.
Yeah. They have
I guess 30 and 30 Chuck was like
they have a can of sardines there.
It better jerk me off too.
Yeah, it better jerk you off.
They have a can of sardines from Italy there.
Yeah.
It's sardines packed in olive oil. It's a can.
Okay, so
they were caught. They were caught by a man in the Mediterranean Sea.
Oh, then it's $30.
And packed into a fucking can.
No, it's $30 because
filled with olive oil. It's probably great. It's $125.
I had to turn you down there.
I'm sorry.
Pat thinks the show's skipping. It's really just Mikey hitting the red level over and over and over again
because
he's getting really pumped up about $135 for fucking sardines.
For sardines.
Well, you didn't put in taxes, so it probably is $135.
No, it's with Chicago taxes.
Good luck,
7%?
Yeah. What, in the city?
Yeah.
10.
Well, it's 135.
Yeah, right.
It's
137.50.
So Batali's a rare ginger Italian. Am I correct?
That's not that rare.
Croc wearing motherfucker.
It's not that rare.
Listen, I don't hate Batali, but
he gets red with
the
best.
Be,
of them.
Yeah, I know. He can go toe to toe with you on the red. He just can be a little pretentious, and those fucking Crocs.
He's not in good shape.
They gotta
go. Health-wise,
those
right?
fucking Crocs gotta go. I know he wears them because they're like fat man shoes. But, like, they got to go. Mikey don't wear no fucking Crocs. He mans it up and throws on some fucking great $400 loafers, and his ankles bleed, but he fucking wears it like a man.
You know what?
Because
that's the old school Italian way. When we're going to the, what was that thing we went to with the geeks?
Oh, I thought you were going to say with the gays. Either one would have been correct.
Yeah.
The Chicago Comic Con.
No, it wasn't Chicago Comic Con.
It was.
C2E2.
Is that the same thing? No, it's different, right?
No, we went to C2E2.
No, we went to C2E2.
When we did, we went to
C2E2. Yes, and you went there and you didn't stay and you wouldn't meet up with us.
The first time I went to C2E2 was this year.
Which we were in.
No, you weren't.
At the McCormick Center.
Yeah, we were there. We were there.
We
had to do the panel.
We hit you up all day. You're like, I left early.
Yeah, no, we were there.
That was you.
I remember. So I had my nice Italian
look. I wasn't staying around. I don't want to go to the husband's panel.
Yes.
All right. Now he remembers.
That guy in the pink Green Bay Packers hat scared the hell out of me.
There was a pink Green Bay Packers
hat.
That's
nice.
Can I tell the story?
Almost,
I don't want to.
Go ahead. Tell it.
So I walk in and everybody was very nice. Okay.
The nicest people ever. No joke.
No joke. You just from a certain aspect you'll understand the comedy behind this. So I meet the guys who are going to be on the panel, Jane and everybody else, and Brad.
Jane Espenson and Brad Bell, husband.
Which were great. Actually, I like Brad a lot.
Yep.
And, you know, I got to tell you. So they go up to start the thing. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go take a seat in the front row. So I'm trying to be very polite, and I walk up, and there's this gentleman in a pink and white Green Bay Packers hat. And I go, excuse me, is this seat taken there? He goes, yeah, by you. And I'm like, oh, this is starting off well.
It sounds right out of like a Seth MacFarlane stereotype gay guy Family Guy character, right?
I sit down. It gets one better. I sit down, and I'm sitting, I'm surfing the crowd, and, you know, they're looking, and I'm looking, and,
looking
know,
around.
You know, everybody knows I don't belong, but they're
Chuck cool
with
was
it.
Thinking body surfing when you said that, and I could tell because I saw his face. He goes, you want body surfing?
So I try to make some small talk because, you know, I'm a little out of place, but everybody's nice. We're all getting along, you know, because I'm nice, they're nice. So I look at the guy, I go, hey, pal, I noticed you got the Packers hat on. Do you like football? He goes, no, I just love them Packers.
Nice, them fudge Packers.
And he just kind of like looks back the other way, and I'm like, oh, that's – oh, hey, I'm like, that's good. But, no, we ended up having a great conversation. It was good. We really enjoyed ourselves.
Nice.
Can we talk a little gym?
Absolutely. I'm going there after this, by the way.
Me too.
Yeah.
You know how I'm doing two-a-days until the film, you know.
Same gym for you guys?
Well,
sometimes.
Yeah.
He belongs to this. We belong to the same unit, but he also does the powerlifting and stuff too.
I missed you there twice yesterday. I was there.
Twice?
I got there at 6. I got there at 6 yesterday. And you got to meet my buddies. All three of my powerlifting friends are all pros.
I was there in the morning
right.
at like 9 or 10, and I was there at like 5. I was there during rush hour, as I call it, with all the fucking pricks that get off of work
what
and they're
time
still
did you
wearing
leave?
Black
what time did
socks
you leave
like
on round
Polacks.
Two?
I probably left at 6. Left around then. We must just missed each other. That's why I check in.
Ships in
you
the night.
You got to text me and be like, I'm coming, matey. This is why I do the check-in, so people can find me.
Just
I want to be found, damn it.
A little story real quick before we get on. I got to tell you about Maddie. So we go to the gym, and he's working out. And I meet him there. We're going to go out afterwards. I'm like, all right, well, I'll hang out down here for 45 minutes. You go ahead.
Oh, is this Friday?
Yeah, so he goes upstairs to go work out. I'm on my phone, on my Facebook. Like 14 posts later for Maddie, I shoot him a text. I'm like, are you still working out? Yeah, I'll be done in a minute. Okay, I look on. He gets into a conversation with somebody on a post on Facebook, like multiple responses back and forth and back and forth back and forth.
During my 60, 90-second rest periods, I'm on Facebook.
Right, so he does a set, takes 5 minutes off, does another set, walks around, bitches about some people, starts posting shit on Facebook, takes a selfie, tells people what he's listening to,
that
does another
true
set.
That is true as he can do 4 pull-ups. Oh, you missed that. Peter Seagal says, I love how I'm repeating show for people. Because Chucky missed it. De Niro can do 100 pull-ups in one gym setting. I believe it. I believe on the machine, but I believe it.
The assisted machine.
Okay, that still takes a little out of you. Listen, I'll tell you something. Yes, I do a lot of supersets on the machine and off the machine. And off the machine, it takes more out of you. And on the machine, it's easier. But the machine still takes out of you.
Sure.
I still get... You're working the same muscle group.
Yeah. It just is a little assisted. But by assisted, not that much because it's weighted. So, you know, if you put it on a heavier weight, you know, it could actually be harder than doing it for real. If you go over the weight that you can handle.
What are you talking about?
On the assisted machine.
Yeah, but the assisted machine... pushes you up.
No, I'm not talking about pull-ups. I'm talking about what's the one thing called I do all the time where I pull up from the middle bars?
Dips.
Oh,
that's not...
How does Andy fucking know before you know? Dips is correct.
Yeah, hey, just
but
to throw you out
dips
here.
Dips on the assisted machine can be harder to do if you put the weight at a really high weight. Because I'm only lifting my body. When I do it manually. If I'm doing assisted and I decide to go 170, that's 20 pounds more than me. So.
Oh, but that's totally different than a pull-up.
No, I know. I'm talking dips. I'm talking dips
now. Yeah.
Because that's assisted too. It's the same machine. They have the pull-up on the same as the dip. You can do either or.
Sure.
So, what were we talking about?
Posting to Facebook on the gym.
Oh.
You can do it on the treadmill.
Here's the thing. Here's why I post it when I'm at the gym. Because I see ridiculous shit at this gym all the time.
It's bad.
People rip on L.A. all the time for vanity and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I haven't seen it any worse than Downers Grove Export in my life. I've worked out in L.A. every day for 6 months. I come home, and I saw more vanity in one gym visit than I saw in 6 months in L.A.
Brother.
Not even kidding.
You need to come with me. Hold on. You need to with me to the gym.
Yeah, yeah, we know. You're powerlifting.
No. They don't have mirrors in my gym. No vanity there. I'm talking about the northwest side of Chicago export, where all the Eastern Europeans work out.
Oh, I'm sure it's even worse. Here's what I see when I come home. At least three people in one gym visit I saw on a cell phone talking instead of working out. Mm-hmm. One guy, I needed to use a shoulder press. He was sitting there literally for 20 minutes and didn't do one workout. Mm-hmm. Didn't do one work. He was on his break. Wouldn't let me use the machine. I see fucking guys walking around in black dress socks all the time. My favorite, and not, I'm not talking like Nike athletic black socks, which I also think look Polack, but I'm talking like straight up like dress socks, okay?
Up to your knees.
Yes. Yeah, no. Yeah, straight up Polack, like Charles. and my favorite yesterday was these two guys work out together, and I've seen them work out separately because they go to the gym around the same time I do. And I see them separately. I didn't know they were friends. And when they work out separately, they're fine. They have shoes on. They're very vain. Both these guys would walk in front of mirrors all the time and They work out together yesterday.
Is that as bad as walking in front of mirrors going and taking pictures
selfie
of yourself?
Selfie. Yeah. No, I'm going to tell you why it's worse. So they work out together yesterday, and I go, oh, these two guys are friends. Makes sense. They're both really vain. Neither of them are wearing shoes. And they're benching. They're not doing squats. They're not doing, you know, whatever.
Deadlifts.
Definitely not deadlifts. I can understand deadlifts because you want balance, so maybe you take your shoes off. That's about it. That would be the only reason you do it, for balance. These guys are benching and doing weights and doing, you know, like arms and stuff. And they got their fucking shoes off. And
they better be swiffering that with a disinfectant.
Oh, they were disgusting. Their socks were all black and everything. And I'm watching these two, and you could tell when two guys are a little too gay at the gym, because there's this gym flirt, I call it, that goes on, that is not like going to a gay bar and seeing two men flirt. It's very bro-y.
Nice.
Like, Mikey and I will work out together, and we'll talk. And we talk about women, and we talk about how much life sucks, and talk about being broke, and talk about where we're going to eat. That's like normal people talk. When you see two guys at the gym and they're both wearing no shoes and they're lifting together and they're like looking at each other and doing the little laughs and the little, hey, bro, and doing the little punch to the chest and the little rub the shoulders and shit, you know there's some stuff going on after the gym.
How about being too inspirational to be like, bro, you got this one. You got this. One more. Give me one more.
No,
that's good.
No, because that means they're working out at our gym, and that doesn't happen.
No. It sounds like you've never been to the gym before.
Yeah, you haven't been to this gym. He used to go to Lifetime, which I found out he was paying $80 a month.
It's ridiculous.
For Lifetime Fitness.
Lifetime is...
$85.
I think it's just because it was in Burr Ridge.
I've been to Lifetime. They're nice gyms.
It's not better than Export.
But it's not better.
The same thing.
No, but the only thing you might be able to give you is that, like, the whole, like, spa part of it might be a little better.
Maybe. That could be.
But other than that, for as far as working out goes,
same.
Let me tell you, too. So here's another thing I see at the gym that's highly, highly annoying. This happened last time I was in town, and I told Mikey about this in September. I went to go use a steam room one time.
Oh, boy.
Some guy offered to fucking jerk me off in the steam room.
Nice.
Here's why I found out about our gym.
How was it?
Yeah, right? This is a very common thing at an L.A. gym. Now, at my gym in L.A., this kind of thing never really happened. But there is a gym called Crunch in West Hollywood that's really a lot of gay sex.
They had them
there.
Downtown Chicago, too, I believe.
Steamworks is what that's called. It's in Boys Town. And I didn't know what it meant until I was in Boys Town like a couple – no, it was last week. And we walked by it, and I turned to my friend and I go, Steamworks. He goes, oh, yeah, that's where everyone goes to jerk off and get laid and blah, blah, blah. And he said it like so nonchalantly, like, oh, yeah, you didn't know that. Yeah.
Nice.
Idiot. So I go to the gym, and this guy offers to jerk me off. Here's what I find out about our gym. Don't shower there, ever. I've seen two dudes in the same shower there before. Swear to God, hand to Christ. Two, don't steam room there. Don't sauna there. Don't hot tub there. Don't do it. There is some freaky shit that goes on. I know it's the freakiest thing. Our gym showers, they fog up, but you can kind of see through them. You see two guys.
See two asses, right?
Yeah, the steam room, you see what's going on. And the worst part is the hot tub, anyone could see, including women, because it's like in the swimming area, and we have an open mirror that you could see the whole thing go on. And I saw two guys way too close there the other day. And this happens no matter what time I go to the gym. No matter what time. I thought it was the time. Mikey's like, you need to stop going at 1 a.m. So I did. So I go at 9 a.m. the other day. Freaky weird shit's going on. I go at 6 p.m. Freaky weird shit's going on. I saw a guy on the Grindr app at the gym the other day. At the gym while he's working out. Which means what he's doing is he's working out and hoping another guy is within 90 feet at
the
gym.
Yeah, the distance he's putting at 90 feet.
No. Bingo. Why? What's the only reason you would use Tinder?
Not that I know about
gym,
well,
Mikey.
Well, here. You know my Hungarian friend Peter.
Yeah.
He was in the gym business for a long time, and this is going back to when Bailey's was a little bit more popular.
Okay.
But there's like in the gay community, to my knowledge, that there's message boards.
Well, it's called the gay church.
Well,
the gym.
There's
that's what it's called.
What?
The gay church. That's what they call it. Gay
well,
church.
Well, they have like a message boards, and they'll like hot spots will get popular.
Really?
And they'll be got, and like it'll get known within that community, like this is a hookup spot, and then eventually it gets shut down.
Oh, kind of like the forest preserve thing
right.
We were talking about.
So,
right.
But where
which
it gets
Adam
back
and I experienced.
Is Peter when he the Bally's in Schaumburg at one point.
Yeah.
Got so bad. I mean, they would get 4 or 5 complaints daily, and there was like the same 3 or 4 guys, and there was this one guy, he was like the leader of the resistance, if you want to call it, and he would be back there walking around naked in like the men's locker room
a
half hour.
I see that.
No, but I'm not talking. But I'm saying he'd just be
just
stark
walking
naked
around,
and he
there's
would
an
like
old guy that does it at our gym.
He would walk up to guys naked, like while they're getting dressed, and be like, "Hey, pal."
No, that happened.
Like
happened
no, like yet. Weird shit.
I'm sure.
And so they found out, and they actually there was a period at the Bally's in Schaumburg that they actually had to have Schaumburg police stationed on site, like 24 hours a day for like months.
They give that job to like the cop who hasn't pulled his weight.
When I signed up at 24 Hour Fitness in North Hollywood, I said. So the girl, I go, I said, okay, I can go to any 24-hour fitness. And she goes, And I go, and her name's Kimberly, sweetest girl ever, manager there. And I shouldn't have ratted her out. But I go, okay, so I can go to the West Hollywood one if I want. She's like, it's not open 24 hours. And I go, well, you're called 24-hour fitness. Why not? And she goes, there was too much stuff going on there, and I wouldn't recommend you go there really at all. I would recommend you just probably stick to this one and maybe the one in Burbank or Glendale. Stay in the Valley. Jeez. And I go, well, why? What kind of stuff are you talking about? She's like, stuff you don't really want to see. I go, oh. And then she goes, locker room stuff.
Oh.
I only got hit on once at the North Hollywood gym, and it was by a famous actor. And I don't want to out them on
okay,
the air,
Kevin Costner.
No, not that famous. More like was famous for one role, like, but like really famous for the one role, and then kind of faded out.
Nice.
But someone I didn't know who was gay. I didn't know. And I know everyone that's gay.
Nice. All right, guys, I got to hit the road.
Andy's
got
to go.
Yep.
Well, Mikey and Chucky will be joining
for sure.
Me for the rest. Andy, thank you,
thank
brother.
Thank you so much.
The
appreciate
show
it.
With Andy and I will be at Andy Dare's website.
Yeah, theandydareshow.com this Friday at midnight
and
Central.
I'll post it on Facebook and Twitter. We did a hell of an episode. We did Christmas. And Andy's talking about getting the guys, you guys, Chucky
you guys
and Mikey
come
and everyone in the studio and do a web show.
A very,
very
Matty Christmas. You call
yeah,
it?
Very
Matty
Christmas.
I like that.
Cool.
A very Matty Christmas.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
can we
it.
We get a Charlie Brown tree with just, like, branches and the one, like, Christmas bulb. Don't you remember that? Is that Charlie Brown I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
No. All right, Andy. Take your headphones. What are you doing? Don't leave them with Charles. You never give them back. He goes to the pawn shop.
You know he's from the South Side, right?
Yeah, he's from the South Side. You know how many pawn shops are over on Harlem?
Oh, no.
You're
fuck, man. 63rd Natchez, right by my crib.
All right, I'll see you later.
Remember when we were at DePaul and there was that professor that used to hang out?
I love how you're like a rapper. You're like, rrr.
Yeah, he's like Run DMC over here.
I started talking to 63rd Natchez in my crib, and I just morphed.
See, that Southside's coming out.
What about DePaul?
Remember there was a teacher in the one that would troll the men's bathroom?
Oh, yeah. Charles and I found out about, well, I found out the hard way, about this professor that would go in. It was in the science building. It was in the one building you wouldn't even suspect.
Right, because there were, like, the least amount of classes going on.
Yeah, you would go in the bathroom and he would do the
and it was always on, like, the third or the fourth floor. Mm-hmm. But then we found out someone showed me, one of my roommates at the time, that he was posting on Craigslist,
that's
too.
What it was. That's where we found
out. Foot tapping thing.
The thing that the senator in Minnesota got arrested for.
Yeah, when he was in
the
bathroom.
Stall.
I want a blowjob.
Yeah,
so
you tap
the
other person's foot.
Mikey, I hope you don't sit in the bathroom at a public place and tap your foot. That's gay code for
yeah.
I want to blow you.
The Minnesota senator got or congressman or something got arrested for that not too long ago. But you actually have to put your foot into the other person's
skull. You know
why
Mikey's not talking for once? He's thinking about all the times he's been in the bathroom, had too much coffee, and his feet were tapping.
I tap my feet all the time.
I know you do.
Yeah. Stop.
Yeah, stop in public bathrooms.
You know what? I can
especially
just...
Especially airports.
I wonder
you'll
how many times... Hold on. I wonder how many times... But I've never, like, stuck my foot into another stall.
That's true. But you are you do have a wide, you know...
I'm just curious. How many times somebody was like, oh, this guy's in. Okay. And they see me and they're like, oh, I don't know if I want to approach him. Like, I wonder how many times that's happened.
I don't know.
And I have no idea. Like, I'm just completely oblivious to it.
Mikey, I think you could be popular with some of the community.
Oh, I'm sure I could, but, some of them, like, you know, if it's like a Luisi-looking kind of guy, he probably sees me. And he's
oh,
like,
my God. How unbearable was he the other night?
I spent an hour talking to him yesterday on the phone.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
After he called me and I didn't answer because
well,
I was in a meeting.
He texted me. He goes, hey, what's the name of your cigar shop? So I see it, and I text him back, and I figure, okay, I answered his question. But then he calls me after I text him back, which proceeds into an hour-long conversation about business. That was fucking irritating. Let me tell you something. If I was Giuliano, I might be dead right now.
Oh, he was annoying Giuliano so bad.
Oh.
Tell the story, Charles, because I don't even know.
You know what? We got to throw this out here, though. We do love the kid.
Oh, I love Alex Luisi. He is the most frustrating pain in the ass on the planet.
Alex Luisi is like, you want lights? I can get you lights. Get you any kind of lights you want.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Giuliano's
right.
Like, where? I'll get you lights. Don't worry about it. Well... Who's getting them? I forget. I got family.
A guy.
What guy?
So,
it's 20 fucking questions.
Yeah.
Let me throw this out here. I'll tell you a little couple tidbits from my conversation. You'll laugh at this. So,
oh,
he's
from yesterday.
He's talking to me about Dickies and about how he's
that's where he works.
The national Midwest director of individuality or something weird like that. I don't know.
This his fourth or his third job?
No, this is the one he's had for a while. So he's telling me about his job.
No. Chucky's referring to when Alex said the other night he has four jobs.
Oh. So,
and Anthony flipped out.
So he's telling me about this. So I threw this little tidbit out there, see if he'd catch it. And I teed it up for him, and he hit it right out of the park. I go, oh, by the way, who's your dad know over there at Dickies? Oh, yeah, he knows the owner. He does his taxes. He's a good friend. Oh, okay. So continue. What do you do over there? Well, and he goes over there. He goes, you know, and I keep telling him, you know, it's slow here in the office. I'm Alex Luisi, man. I need to be out on the street rolling, making things happen. I'm not going to be here in the office taking phone calls. You can hire somebody that, you know, that's below my pay grade, man. You know, they're not getting it. And I'm like,
I'm looking for a job.
Uh-huh.
He ain't helping you.
Yeah.
Nope.
Why not?
I hope he doesn't have that attitude at work.
Well, I'm just looking forward to doing the film with Alex Luisi, producer, and Charles is a producer, so Charles will have to deal with Alex. And
I'm afraid that Giuliano is going to call you, and you're not going to answer, and then he's going to call me to complain about Alex.
When he signs the check, is he going to spell Alex VITO?
Don't piss me off. Right.
Don't fire me off. Now we're picking on him.
Oh. All right, we got to
stop.
You're
picking on me now. That's what? My movie he's fucking with that Luisiness.
Alex.
Some big actor is going to be. Can you get me a coffee? Get you a coffee. Pull on my bakery. Get the fuck out of here.
I met with the actress who I get naked with a lot in the
you
movie.
You told me.
Yesterday.
Yeah, your on-screen girlfriend.
Yeah, we got together last night.
How's Miss Woods?
Well, she's good. She's good. She's going to be great. And she brought up the date with Lenny and Chuck.
Uh-oh.
And she said it was definitely still the weirdest / craziest night of her life.
One of mine, too. We share something in common.
Oh, Charles, they all kind of just run together.
I kept telling you not to bring us.
Is that when Lenny discovered that you were ticklish in that one spot?
No, that's when Lenny was talking about...
That's when Lenny discovered veins on cocks.
That's when Lenny was talking about porn.
Oh, that night.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love watching pornos with those big, fat, veiny cocks. Just
on Blu-ray.
Pounded.
You
yeah,
forget
on
Blu-ray.
because you can really see it.
I think
you
our waitress really liked that conversation,
it.
Too.
You know, I think from being an only child, he does it only for attention. I don't know. I told him the night he's going to
die. I think he really
like Don Simpson because Don Simpson died on the toilet reading Oliver Stone's autobiography. That's how Lenny's going to go. On the toilet playing Angry Birds or Candy Crush.
Thinking
or
a big fat
Fruit
fanny
Ninja.
Ducks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he won't be as rich as Don Simpson. That's for sure. Yeah, so she remembered that night very well. She goes, yeah, that was still one of the strangest nights of my life. And I'm like, and you're doing my movie. Thanks. She's like, no, because I like you a lot. It's good. It's fine. But shockingly, we never went on a second date. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, me too.
You know, now we're getting naked together anyway. So I won. Still get her in bed.
We'll be in the room watching.
With fake sex.
We won.
And listen, just because you're a producer, you are not allowed in my nude scene area.
There's going to be a lot of people in that room.
Yeah,
no,
I get it.
It's going to be me and Wimp and a camera.
I get enough Nazi for
oh, wait,
photos.
Oh, so no Sarah
you.
Either, huh?
Well, okay, here's the deal. If you've got to be in the room for my sex scenes, you also got to be in the room for the gay sex scenes.
You're going to be in the room for both of them anyhow.
Well, yeah, I'm directing it.
Now, well, then, I guess it's the same
okay,
thing.
Okay, Mikey's going to be in the room for the gay sex scenes, just I got to see. So, yeah, you can be in the room to see
now
my
I want
ass.
To see it, too. So I'm in. I want to see Mikey in the room.
Yeah, right.
I'm in.
He will not. He would not laugh.
I could see it not being there. They'd be screaming. I'd be like, "This is like being at the Bijou Theater."
Because it's not going to be real, but it's going to be very simulated.
Been to the Bijou Theater?
No, it's going to be very simulated. Mikey won't last a minute in that room. Not 1 minute.
All right.
Not that Mikey has a problem with it. It's just not. Mikey also doesn't watch Disney movies. Okay, it's just not
hey,
his cup
hey,
of tea.
I watch plenty of Disney movies.
What's the last Disney movie you saw?
Aladdin.
Yeah, right. 1994.
No, that's mine.
No, the okay. Lion King was after Aladdin.
All right, okay. I did see the Lion King.
No, wasn't the Indiana King. Jones a Disney movie?
No, that's a Paramount film.
Okay, what about Star Wars? That's a Disney movie.
No.
Well, it is now.
20th Century Fox, but now they own it. Yes, now they own
what
it.
What about... He's getting there.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Of the Caribbean.
That is a Disney
That's
movie.
That's a Disney movie.
Yes. Yeah, all right. Good guess. Thanks, Charles.
You're welcome.
For help. So when's the last Disney cartoon you saw?
Lion King.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, The Emperor's New Groove is great.
It was in like 99.
Yeah, did you see it, though? Crump
yeah,
was great.
Yeah, I saw it a long time
David
ago.
David Spade, wonderful.
David.
Well,
Spade.
Here.
Wonderful.
Let's
Lenny Malton over here.
let's encompass this question.
Okay.
What are the last like five?
Frozen just made $100 million this week.
I saw
at the
Ice
box
Age.
Office.
I saw Ice Age.
Ice Age is Fox, not Disney.
So let's encompass the new question. So what are the last five like Disney cartoons?
Frozen, Planes. Tangled.
I saw Cars.
List.
I saw Cars.
It's Pixar.
Fuck.
Tangled's on that list. Did you see Tangled?
Is Disney must really be lacking in the cartoon department?
Well, up until Frozen, that they just did.
What about?
Did really
I mean,
well.
Toy Story. That wasn't Disney either.
That was Pixar.
Yeah, it was when it was Disney / Pixar.
Oh well, you know what? You're right because it still did the Disney thing in the beginning.
Yeah.
Did they split?
Yeah.
Wasn't Pixar like the
Pixar's their own company.
Right, but at one point Pixar was like the digital studio of Disney, weren't they? Like the people that started doing the cartoon or the
They were the CGI.
Right.
Yeah, they started doing the CGI. I bet this whole conversation's completely inaccurate. People are like, why do we listen to this show?
Probably.
I need a fucking fact checker for every five things they say.
What about Mulan? When did Mulan come out? That was pretty good.
Mulan. It was like 96, 97.
It's been a while.
Oh, I saw the Moses one with Val Kilmer.
That's Fox.
Oh.
And Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey, that's Fox.
They were in it?
Well, they did the song, When You Believe.
That was, I remember, is that the one where they have, like, the big, like, chase in, like, the Egypt, and they're building the pyramid
and
two
what
brothers?
Was it even called?
Never heard of the story of Moses?
Right.
Did you go to Catholic school?
No, I know it well. I'm just saying that's the movie, though. I remember
called,
the movie.
Do any of us remember what...
I forgot that
Prince of Egypt.
Yeah
that's
Prince
it. That's it.
Is that right?
Yeah, actually.
Or Princes of Egypt.
It was actually a pretty solid movie, too.
I think I watched it in religion class.
I think I remember falling asleep during it. Not that it's a bad movie. I just never seen it since I was like 15, and back then that was boring.
Has it been that long?
14. Yeah, because it came out around the same time as Titanic, which I've never seen.
Wow.
Saw once.
I never saw Titanic.
Never see it again.
I think we've talked about this on the show. I've never seen Titanic.
You've never seen Titanic?
Oh, I've seen the titty scene. That's it.
Well, then you've
seen Titanic.
You've seen the movie.
Yeah, I've seen.
Hey, when I came,
but it wasn't like, oh, I saw the titty scene, so I could jerk off. I put on the titty scene and then took bologna and put it on her boobs, and I was like, oh, look, there's bologna on her boobs, and my friend started laughing, and I was high.
You were 14 when this movie came out.
Yeah, but I was 16 when I was putting bologna on naked chicks on TV. Yeah.
I don't know how you ever got laid.
This is what I did with my free time.
He didn't.
I would freeze frame VHSs and put bologna on boobs.
Because I'll tell you what, when I saw the movie when I was 12,
yeah.
And I was in the movie theater like ready to pull a Pee Wee Herman. Okay.
Oh no! I remember Kate Winslet. We paused it, and I took the bologna with the it was maybe more to Dell with the pistachio nuts, and I would put it on the TV because it sticks to the TV right to her boobs, and I go, hey, look, she's got bologna boobs.
Did you? Were you one of those guys? Did you? When you were like six, did you still think girls had cooties?
When I was six,
They do now.
Yeah, I do now. Yeah, right.
Because I was one of those kids.
Charles.
I remember being like kindergarten and first grade, and being all the girls like, "Oh, girls have cooties."
Girl I made out with was in kindergarten, and I wouldn't talk to her for like 3 or 4 weeks because I thought we were going to get like married or the whole school was going to find out we made out, and I thought it was like really embarrassing.
Kind of like both of our Tinder relationships right now.
Yeah, nothing, not a lot's changed.
You know,
for either of us.
I'm kindergarten. I'll tell you, I apparently was different from the beginning. I never thought about cooties. I was always like, hey, let's, you know, whatever, and I would tell everybody about it and how great it was. I mean, I was just like apparently against the groove there.
You were a player back in the day?
Yeah. I tell you what, I did a lot better at 7 than I did at 14.
7 was good years for you.
It was good.
You know, when you're,
that girl that lived behind me, she was good.
When your sexual prime's when you're 7, you've usually been on To Catch a Predator or...
A Priest's Confessional Booth.
Or, yeah.
Well, when the other one's 7-2, it's not so wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Oh, To Catch a Predator. What happened to that show?
What a great show. That's
some
of the best
anymore,
TV
though, I don't
ever.
Think.
What? The South Park To Catch a Predator was amazing.
Yeah, well, anything South
Park.
When's
Chris Hansen's premiere?
Not clean as we all think.
Oh, no.
Think
I think
touching kitties, but I think
no,
he's like fucking hookers.
He's dirty as hell, but
I'm just assuming he's fucking hookers. I don't have proof. You can't sue me for that. But, he just looks like the kind of guy that would be fucking
go to, like, the bondage stuff. Club and have girls put their cigarettes
out on him. S&M clubs for sure. Because, like, he's way too into getting those pervs. Like, something weird's got to get that guy off.
Who knows?
It's never... Listen, here's what I've learned about, like, hardcore, like, vigilant against predator-type people. Whether it's religious people, whether it's whatever. They're usually into the kinkiest shit. They usually have some real weird kink factor. Like, I'll give you an example. A lot of the straight Baptists and Christian people I know that, like, think gay anything is, like, abhorrent. I also have heard them discuss what they've done in bed with their wives or their girlfriends. Pretty kinky. So it's usually the people that are like really against some kind of sexual act. That
hey, man.
You, really into another one.
You know how I am. As long as it's mano y mano, man. Dress me up, put me in a dress, get the whip. Right. I don't care.
Does mano y mano mean man to man?
Yes, it does.
And like you said, put me in a dress and give me a whip. I don't care. Yeah, you're going to want to revise that one.
That's why he wants to be in the room when those scenes are going on.
Hey, wait.
It's all
See,
coming
I always,
together.
I always thought that meant one-on-one. Apparently, that was the wrong choice of words. Thank God we don't have the soundboard on this one.
Oh, no, Tobias is making a clip of it right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure Tobias is probably like, that's
yeah, mano y mano whips and chains, eh? Oh, Patty. Oh, by the way, you ever call you back, Tobias?
No, he never put down the pizone.
Too good?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's right. He's got that 40 hours of fucking...
Doctor Who.
Something about being decent or something, or...
What's it? Remembering...
No.
Wait, yeah, it used to be Doctor Who. He's into some...
It's the one with the old lady on it.
Oh, God.
Downtown.
Always be decent or something? I don't remember.
Oh, jeez. Do I actually have to go Pat Tobias' Facebook?
I hope Pat's
plug,
listening right now.
To plug what he's watching? I hope he's not listening. Well, knowing Pat and Caesar, they tuned out about 25 minutes ago.
Oh, did they?
At the very least.
Oh, well.
Tobias crying about Paul Walker, Paul Walker. Man, he has a hard-on for Paul Walker. Oh, here it is. Keeping up appearances.
Keeping up appearances.
I knew appearance was in it.
That's why I said decent. I was thinking,
A nice little gift from BBC Home Entertainment, the newly released collector's edition of Keeping Up Appearances, every episode, all five seasons, 1,370 minutes of some of the best British comedy, plus a boatload of special features.
Yeah, like that knit bag that came with it or something?
Yeah, it came in like a baggie that looks like a little school knapsack or something. And it is some like old broad in a picture frame on
right,
the cover.
Right.
Oh, Tobias,
is
you're,
this like,
you're into some weird shit.
Is this like 70s and 80s British comedy?
I don't know, but it looks like granny porn. That's what the box looks like. And by the way, it looks like the oldest box I've ever seen. Like, it doesn't look like a new DVD at all. It looks like it came out
when Faulty
Towers came out.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
I bet Pat secretly watches, like, Absolutely Fabulous. He looks the type. No?
He probably does.
Yeah. Keeping Up Appearances. Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to watch it.
You know what the worst part is? We probably would watch it and think it's funny as all hell.
It probably is funny, but it just looks like that
I've
British
never heard
shit
of
that,
it.
Pat's in all this British stuff. You just heard of Doctor Who, Charles.
I've heard of it.
I
just watched it for the first time.
You never watched
Doctor Who?
By
the way, speaking of British,
are we all 50 years behind on Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I want to throw this out, and I'm sure you haven't made a point to watch it, but have you seen Chicago's Best now that it got the new British guy on there?
No, you told me about it. You told me it's terrible. You told me he's insufferable.
It's
makes
terrible.
Ted look
well,
like
he makes Tara look like fun to be around.
I didn't like the old guy.
No, that's what he's saying. He says he makes Ted look like he's Jay Leno.
And Brittany
like
Payton.
Great.
I mean, I love the Paytons, but she's annoying.
Yeah. Charles.
This new guy.
Chuck, Caesar loves that every time I bring it up. I'm sure he'll love it even more when you do.
What?
Because now that's two people that say Brittany Payton is annoying on this show.
Zamboni Marconi or something? Marconi Zamboni? I don't remember.
But then I like the...
How was that? 2 years ago? Who knows?
He needs to get over the Zamboni Marconi because that's a great nickname.
I still don't even know what the hell it's about.
That's a great nickname, though. He needs to get over
it. And as I learned, as we all probably have learned, nicknames are not chosen. They're given.
That's right. That's right.
And usually if you don't like it, it's a better nickname.
Well, it is chosen because we still call him Zamboni Marconi behind his back.
No, but I know. I want to call it to him to his face.
Well, we haven't seen him in a Coon's Age.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. I guess you're not supposed to say Coon's Age anymore, even though it has nothing to do with what racist people
why?
Think. It's not a racist term.
Because you're not allowed to say anything anymore.
Yeah,
white people are not allowed to say anything anymore.
No, literally someone said, I just read an article about this, you're not allowed to say Coon's Age because it just sounds like it's bad.
I hate this country.
Yeah. It doesn't matter where this term came from, where the phrase came from. It just sounds like it's bad. So, for anyone that was like, did he just say in a Coon's Age, he's a racist? No. Look up what it means. It doesn't mean anything racist. However, I guess you're really not supposed to say it because it can be construed that way somehow.
Does that mean you can't say many moons ago because that was a Native American
thing? No, you
can't.
You're not supposed to.
Or it's a blue moon.
You're being inappropriate. You're being inappropriate.
You can't say anything anymore.
No. No. What else did you hate this country for? You were mad about something.
Political correct.
Taxes.
Yeah, you yelled at me about something on my trip home when I was tight.
Oh, bullying.
Bullying. That's what it was.
You can't say anything to anyone without being a bully anymore.
No, I agree with you. It's just what was ridiculous when Mikey's phone was buzzing 60 times from you yelling about bullying was, Mikey, you should tell the audience about our mass texts.
They're awful.
It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
If it ever gets out, none of us are running
for
public office.
We all have this chat room I started when I was in L.A. because I didn't get to see the guys all the time, so I wanted to be able to talk to everyone like we were all in the same room.
Right.
So we had this mass text thing. Here's the problem. We all do it at a very inappropriate time, whether it's me or anyone else. It always happens to them. The most inappropriate time. There have been mass texts started at 3 a.m. when only like two people are up, and they'll be the only ones having the
those
conversation.
Those are mostly the ones you start.
Those are mine. I am the one up at 3 a.m., and I usually catch one other person up at 3 a.m. But the ones started by the other guys usually are like when Mikey and I are at the gym. and our phones will ring like 75
yeah,
times.
Yeah, you know, when I'm in the process and, you know, I'm like listening to death metal and I'm in the process of trying to pick up 700 pounds and I'm like at that point I'm getting pumped up. I get my sniffing salts going. I bend down, I grab the bar, do a couple of braces and I'm like, ding, what the, ding, 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 ding. And then the music cuts back. I'm like, all right, I'm safe. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to ding. And then at that point, I want to kill somebody.
Oh, can we have a table vote? Can we tell Tobias to move the show back till 7 p.m. starting next week? So
it took me 20 minutes to get out of a parking lot.
So
today.
7 p.m., are we agreeing?
That's better. Yeah. Because I left work a little early today, and I was still late.
Seven. Are you in on seven? Yeah. Seven. Pat, from now on, 7 p.m., and by the way, I'll leave the show on this note. By the way, Peter Sagal, great guest, Judge Grudge Match in theaters December 25th. But Pat Tobias has come back towards us. He wanted us to know. Maybe he should watch some normal stuff like guys jerking off in the steam room at the gym like Pat.
Pat, I love you.
But by the way, Pat just was homophobic and awful on the air, and I hope people remember that. I hope that's remembered, Pat. I hope this comes back to bite you with TMZ.
Pat's got your card, Maddie. Some of the comments you post on your page are hilarious.
Pat, by the way, I've saved all the mass texts I've gotten from you people, so you all better watch your ass. I'm going to take you bitches down.
Why, Pat? Do you have a magic screwdriver to point at us?
He must think that we've said something inappropriate.
Pat, I just want to make sure you know something on the air, so it's a recorded, that you don't know when and you don't know how, but one day... We're all showing up to your house, and we're coming into your basement. And whether you like it or not, you will see daylight. You will see daylight.
And we'll see you next Wednesday, folks.